cool, cause Brooklyn's cool. Friday, June, the last day of school. Girls stepping to the mall to swing, setting up dollars for their summer fling. Cars on the avenue create gridlock.
Hola, señores and señoritas. ¿Cómo estás, si vous plaît? Hi, I'm Ari Shaffir. How are you guys? Welcome to Ari Shaffir Skeptic Tank. This is my podcast. I have a podcast. It's called Ari Shaffir Skeptic Tank, and you're listening to it. On today's episode, I got my friend Dwayne Perkins. He's a really, really funny comic. When I started in L.A. in stand-up, he was one of the guys who was already doing real well. He was already did like a six-minute set on Comedy Central. He was going to have a half hour like within like a year after I started or so. That was really, really funny. And I've been wanting to get him on for a while. I tried to get him onto that Black Cast, that podcast about being black. But he was like, I could literally never make you understand what it's like to be black. You would never get that. And I was like, okay, we won't do it. And I also asked Ian Edwards, and Ian was like, nah, man, nah. It's like, all right, cool, Ian Edwards. So I got Al Jackson to do it. But I've been wanting to try to get Dwayne back in some way to do this podcast. And so then we figured out, as I start thinking more and more about moving to New York and where I'm going to live, if I do, it's like a fucking weed in my brain. It won't go away. That's a bad example. It's like when you picture your ex-girlfriend fucking some new dude. It just, the thought won't leave your head. So annoying. By the way, this podcast is sponsored by Gamefly. At Gamefly.com, they have, I don't know, they didn't give me any talking points. But here's the deal. I don't give a shit about that. Gamefly is like Netflix. If you know what Netflix is like, it's like Netflix for video games. And by the way, remember when they had the other Netflix, when Blockbuster tried to do their ship and stuff? It was so bad. They never got stuff on time. They would send me season CD or DVD 3 of like season 2 of The Wire before DVD 2, because they'd be like, oh, we're out of DVD 2 right now. It's like, well, use your brain, Blockbuster idiots. Wayne Huizenga, I'm glad the Dolphins suck. Remember when Blockbuster was a humongous thing? Now they're gone. They're just fucking done. Man, shit changes. Anyway, I'm talking about Gamefly. So Gamefly is just like the Netflix version, not the Blockbuster version. They're good. Everybody I know is like into it. They just send you video games. You use it for as long as you want, and then you send it back. And the way I come in, they gave me this code. If you go to Gamefly.com/Ari, then it clicks in. They figure out that you went through me, and they give me like $15. They give you a free trial membership for like 15 days. And then they give me like $15. It's such a sweet deal. And it adds up. So if like 10 of you do it, that's $150. And if 1,000 of you do it, that's more. So anyway, go to Gamefly.com/Ari. Get the 2-week free trial. Cancel after 10 days. Cancel after 2 days. Cancel after a year. I don't care. Use it. It's fun. It's great. It's a great service. I have trouble with video games because when I play them, that's it. You ain't going to see me for like 2 weeks. I'm looking at this Portal 2. Matt Egger was staying at my house, and he took out Portal 2, and now I'm looking at it, and I want to start playing. Maybe I'll play it tonight. Maybe I'll just get into it right now and say, fuck the Comedy Store. No, I have a meeting tomorrow. If I play this game, I will not sleep until my meeting. I have a meeting at 11 a.m. It's now 10:10. I will play straight through to 11 a.m. and be horrible for my meeting. I can't do that. Fuck. All right, maybe after the meeting I'll play. Maybe I'll take them on the road. Oh, I don't have a video game console on the road. Anyway, the point is, God, I'm addicted. I'm such an addict to certain things. Certain things I'm an addict for. Candy, weed, video games, and hot, hot pussy. Anyway, go to Gamefly.com/Ari. Help me out. Get the 2-week free trial. Do whatever you want with it. Also, I've said this on past podcasts, but my album is out now. It went to number one on iTunes, you guys. It went to number one on iTunes, and it went to number one on Amazon for the comedy albums, on both of them. You guys have no idea how much this legitimizes me in the world of comedy. To have a number one podcast ahead of Jim Gaffigan and Louis C.K. and Aziz Ansari, and now, what's his name, came up there. So he's like ahead of me now. But Dimitri Martin. But just to be in the mix with those guys, it just makes everyone look at me around L.A. and New York. I'm like, oh, Ari's like a real comic, which I have been for years. There's all these young guys. Not even young, but all these underlings who are like the degenerates of the comedy world. And we don't know how to network. We don't know how to fucking talk to people. We don't know what a meeting is. I have a general meeting tomorrow with CBS. And I don't even know what I'm supposed to do with those things. But these other people, they fucking know. They're in. And I'm saying it badly. I'm saying it like, fuck them. But like, it's not their fault. They're just getting the benefit of that stuff. That's great. But the people who don't know how to do that, who don't know how to talk to people, like regular humans like me and a bunch of guys at the Comedy Store, and there's a bunch of guys at the Comedy Cellar in New York too. Kurt Metzger and Jay Oakerson are virtually unknown by everybody, but there's no reason they should be because they're so fucking funny. Everyone should know who those guys are, but no one does because none of us have any idea how to do the networking crap. It's not part of stand-up. All we got told when we started is fucking do a great job and everything will get taken care of. And then 12 years later, nobody knows who the fuck any of us are. We're killers, and no one will fucking give us a chance. Anyway, so if you guys bought my album, that helped super highly, helped legitimize me and make all these people realize, like, oh, even though they're dirty, even though they do shit their own way, they're still funny, and people can respond to that. So thank you. If you haven't gotten it yet, go to iTunes or Amazon or wherever. It's called Revenge for the Holocaust. It's my first album. It's an hour of fucking sweet, sweet entertainment. If you guys got an hour to kill and you want $8, it's cheaper than a fucking movie, and it's going to be way funnier than anything you see, except maybe Jackass. Anyway, all right, so I did Amazon or whatever. I did Gamefly. I did my album, and I guess that's it. So here we go with the episode. Oh, no, I got to do my dates. I'm a stand-up comic, you guys, in case you didn't just hear from what I just said. I perform at the Comedy Store. This is what I do. If you like my podcast, it's bullshit compared to what I can do on a stage. That's my thing. That's the only thing I care about. So please come see me live. And here are my dates till the end of the year. I'll just rip through them. San Diego, California with Steve Renazzisi and Steve Simone, October 12th and 13th. The DC Improv in Washington, DC, October 19th, 20th, and 21st. Then Portland, Oregon, the 25th to the 27th. Then we go to November, and we got Portland, 25th through the 27th. Calgary, oh, that's still October. Calgary, November 1st through the 3rd. November 8th in Chicago with Joey Diaz, an enchanted evening with Joey Diaz and Ari Shaffir. November 8th, House of Blues, Chicago. That's a big show. That's going to be an event. People are flying in from far away, driving in from hours out. So if you want to get your ticket, hurry up and get it. November 8th. Then straight from there, I go to New York for the New York Comedy Festival, where I'm doing two shows at the Stand, November 9th and 10th, and then a live Ari Shaffir Skeptic Tank on November 10th during the day. Everything's available on my website. And then in Minnesota at the end of November, last week, at the House of Comedy. So that's it. Also, my storyteller show, October 24th is the next one in L.A. It's $5. It's a bunch of great stories. I'm not going to do Halloween stories because I realized I did that last year. I'm going to do wedding stories. We're doing weddings. Nothing to do with Halloween. Although weddings to me are just as scary as a ghost. So it's $5 for Planned Parenthood. I haven't booked anybody yet. I'll start asking people now. But it's always a fucking sick show. And the first episode of that I'm going to put up in about 3 weeks or 4 weeks online. So come. It's $5. They're great. And then the one after that is November 27th. Also at the Los Angeles Improv, and yada, yada, yada. So here we go with the episode. Ari Shaffir's Skeptic Tank, episode 80. What are we looking at? 82? I think 82, but it could be 81 or 83. No, it's either 81 or 82. Let's go with 82. Ladies and gentlemen, Ari Shaffir's Skeptic Tank, episode 82. Maybe I should just look. Idiot. Fucking never look. Just look. All right, it's 82. So ladies and gentlemen, Ari Shaffir's Skeptic Tank, number 82. With Dwayne Perkins, where Brooklyn at?
Where Brooklyn at? Where Brooklyn at? Where Brooklyn at? Where Brooklyn at? We gon' go like this until you ready, check it. I got 7 Mac 11s, about 8, 38s, 9-9s, 10 Mac 10s. The shit's never end. You can't touch my riches, even if you had MC Hammer and the 357 bitches. Biggie Small, the millionaire, the mansion, the yacht, the 2 weeks, box, the 2 hot.
So fuck, we're off. Do you need to get anything? Want to do anything before we start?
No, like, you know, I'm good.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, I do intros later, so.
Oh, cool, cool. I got you.
But anyway, Dwayne Perkins.
Yes, I'm here.
Yeah, I want to talk to you about Brooklyn anyway. We're talking about New York. So that's where you're from?
Yes, I'm from New York.
You got to do that stuff? Should we wait?
No, you know, this person wants me to call them, but I
Go for it. I'll wait.
No, I don't want to call. I'm just going to say call later.
Okay.
And then I'll cut it off. Sorry about that.
Who is it, Chuck?
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe.
It's a chick who doesn't even know what a podcast is.
Oh, really? So you're trying to explain to them, like, I have to do an interview? How would I describe this?
But I kind of don't want her to know, because I don't want her to know to find these podcasts that I'm doing.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I don't tell my friends, my close friends, because half the time I'm talking about them.
You tell some story from your childhood.
Yeah, right.
And you're like, I don't want you to know. Nobody you know is going to hear that. If you hear it, you're going to get mad.
Right, right, exactly.
You know?
It's better if she doesn't know anything.
Yeah. I hear that. I'm sort of a fan of that. Just like not letting them know. I've gotten in trouble a few times. People are like, why'd you say that? I'm like, because it doesn't matter.
Right.
You stop. I didn't say you cheated on your wife.
Right, right, exactly. And everything's, there's so much out there now.
Mm-hmm.
That.
What do you mean, in terms of what?
Like your information, your business. There's more out there than you think. So like, privacy is sort of like in your head now. So it's a figment of your imagination.
Yeah,
at this
once
point.
You're on like Facebook, the only people that private, nobody like us.
No,
the only people
no.
that private, like people that really aren't on any social media.
Exactly, exactly. Like I think about the fact that, like, I can't even have enemies. Really?
Why?
Because my schedule is right on my website.
Oh yeah.
And if you really got a problem with me, you could just meet me somewhere and co-cock me. Hope I'm not giving ideas out right now, yeah. But
that's why I used to challenge people when I did some like these videos that got people all angry.
Oh, they yeah, those I remember
Amazing
those.
Videos. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. People are like, I'll fucking kill you if I ever see you. These are the MySpace days. I'm like, well, my schedule's right there.
Yeah, exactly.
If you cared, I'm sure you could find something in a busable distance.
Right,
and
right.
Come kill me,
right.
Like you said.
Yeah, most people don't follow. They don't have follow through is a thing.
No. They don't really intend to do anything.
Yeah. I heard Woody Allen once talk about like the secret to screenwriting. And you know, Woody Allen's prolific, pretty brilliant. And Woody Allen is the reason I wrote a screenplay. I haven't sold one yet, but he said, they were like, what's the secret? He was like, well, just finish.
Oh yeah.
Most people don't finish. And I was like, that seems reasonable. Just
most
do one.
Don't finish.
And then now you've done one.
Yeah. Move on to your next thing.
And move on. And I'm like five in now, and I'm going to sell one at some point. You
Dude,
know?
I've gotten 60% through so many screenplays.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
You know, the
they're
key,
worthless like that.
The key is writing partners. Like, I can write it myself, but with comedy and all, I just need one person to be accountable to.
That's what I mean. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it's just like working out, where it's like if you're doing it on your own, you're like, I'll just do it later. I don't have time today. But if you have to meet somebody.
Have to meet. And I always write with people. No offense to them. Again, they won't hopefully hear this, but they have a little less going on than I do. So like, it's kind of like just a thing I'm doing on the side, but it's their thing.
Right.
They're
so
like,
they'll push you harder.
We got to fucking meet. Like, what's up? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I can't, you know, I've entered into an agreement with them, so I have to
hold up
my end. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. I always do those things like enter an agreement with people's.
Right.
But then like, I suddenly like, why did I do that? I don't want to do this.
Well, that's the thing. It's got to be someone you don't mind sort of being accountable to.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you're like.
That's a good idea when they have less shit going on than you. So like,
it's got to be their thing. This. It's got to be their. That's going to be it. That gets annoying, though, because they expect you to have a higher level of availability than you can really have.
Oh, right.
But, you know, you can sort of massage that. They can't be too aggressive. That's the thing. Like, some people are like. You know, like it's like dating a chick who wants to just go right in and just,
full on, like, yeah, like boyfriend girlfriend,
like every day. And you're like, wait, we got to pace ourselves here.
I was
gonna
say that about girls, same thing. Where it's like, it's nice if they want me a little more than I want them,
right?
But not too much more.
They can't be psycho.
Yeah, like I'd like you when I'm like, hey, I have a free night. I'd love to hang out with you. I'd like to be free,
right?
But I don't want them to sit there the next night going, where are you?
And it's tough to find that because if they're too hands off, then they're just off dating someone else and they forget about you and then it's done.
Yeah, exactly. You want them to still want you.
Right, right.
Yeah, it's a key. It's a hard line.
So anyway, you want to just talk about Brooklyn as well.
Yeah, but all sorts of shit. But yeah. How long were you there? Did you grow up there?
I grew up in Brooklyn. I was born in a place called East New York.
Okay.
Technically, I wasn't born there. I was born, I think, in Crown Heights. There's a hospital called the Brooklyn Jewish Hospital.
Yeah,
since I was born, I'm very proud of that. So I always feel like I always feel like I got my job done by a professional, my circumcision. Not that I had a bris or anything, but I felt like
because it was a Jew.
I felt good about that. Yeah, yeah. And I've never been with a Jewish girl, so I've never been able to show her and be like, "Huh? What is this?"
Have you really never been?
Amazingly, I have never been with a Jewish woman. I don't even know how that's possible.
You've been with plenty of white women, right?
Yeah, I've had a few of my share.
Yeah, you would think you would have gone there.
And I have like a lot of Jewish friends. I went to junior high school with Jewish guys. Just, I've been to Israel twice. I don't
really?
Know what's going on.
Oh, with Avi?
Yeah, with Avi. Both times.
Like an army girl?
No.
How hot are those girls?
The first time I took a girl with me. That was just ridiculous. Yeah. We broke up like within 6 months, and I regret that still.
Why would I have wasted that trip?
Yeah, I got her a ticket. Like, it was just whatever. So I've never been with a Jewish woman, and I'm from New York. I mean, it's just,
yeah, there's plenty to choose from there.
I'm defying the odds, actually, you know. So yeah, I'm from the projects in Brooklyn, and
wait, what's the difference between like the projects of Brooklyn and like the Knitting Factory area in Brooklyn?
Okay, well, like, I'm from Coney Island, right?
Okay.
And technically, we're
that's far out there.
As far as southernmost part of Brooklyn. It's okay. South Brooklyn.
That's like the last stop on the train?
Last stop on the D, F, B, and the N train.
And there's nothing past that. There's just ocean after that.
Well, there's this little neighborhood. And then, yeah, Brighton okay. Beach is there where the Russians live. And then Coney Island. And Bensonhurst is right there, too, where... Back in the day where, like, the Italian guys lived.
A lot
like,
of Jews there in Bensonhurst.
Yeah, yeah. A lot of Jews and Italians. So, the different, like, a project, technically, a project means it's city-owned. A lot of people don't know that.
Oh, I didn't know that.
So, like, a tall building is not a project. It's just it's just an apartment building. But if the city owns it, then yeah. It's a project.
And so, if there's a slumlord, then it's not a project.
No, but there's some places, like, that are even houses that are really bad. But they're not. But a slumlord can kind of, it has a project feel because a slumlord is probably getting some money from the government.
To keep those people there.
Think of Section 8. So, like, those people can't afford to pay market price, whatever market price is. So then the government will kind of, like, make up the difference sometimes.
They did that, and my friend had a place right overlooking the World Trade Center site.
Right, right.
And they were giving people, like, we'll give you $1,000 towards your rent.
Wow.
For, like, the first year, then $500 the next year, and then they had to move because they were like, we can't afford this anymore.
And a lot of people look at that and think, like, it's bad. But it's a few things. One, like, I know a friend, this girl I dated lived in Chelsea.
Yeah.
And the same thing, when they wanted to build up Chelsea, they told people, well, you don't have to pay tax for 10 years.
Really?
So she...
To entice people to come there and populate
So it happens on both ends. Even with people with money, they get different types of enticement.
Oh, wow.
And... Who knows? The market value could be propped up by that. Because, like, all those slumlords, what if the government wasn't doing it? Then you could say, well, those people couldn't afford to live there. True. Or maybe the market price would go down.
Because why?
Because people couldn't pay it.
Oh, right.
Like, how many people would be left who could really pay it?
1,000, then you go up to 2,000, you're like, well, you're not going to sell your apartments.
Right. If the government stops paying the extra 500,
right.
Then people... People just move out, you know. So anyway, like, a project is actually the city owns it.
That's how I was just in D.C. and they cleaned up this area called U Street. You know how when they clean up areas, like Hollywood Island?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, certain areas just clean up. And you're like, how do they clean it up? Where does the crime go?
Right.
But that's what somebody told me. It's that Section 8 housing. They say, okay, instead of being available in U Street in D.C., we're moving you guys to Waldorf. It'll be there now.
Yeah, they do that.
So
they do that.
They have to go. And make it someone else's problem.
And simultaneously, they'll entice... Like hipsters and gay guys to move in.
Hipsters and gay guys.
You know, no tax or whatever it is, you know. But in Coney Island, a weird thing has happened where, like, Brighton Beach is expanding into Coney Island. And, like, because Russians are tough and no one's going to mess with them.
Yeah.
Like, last time I went to Coney Island, there were Russians just in the projects. Just like I saw a Russian guy in the middle of the projects smoking.
Really?
Just with his flip-flops on. Like
they don't give a fuck?
Like, I'm fucking from Russia, and who's going to fuck with me? And no one does.
How do they know they're not just some white dude, like victim-y?
Well, you gotta have an air about you. You gotta not look like a victim. That's the whole thing. Like, I learned how to not get picked on.
Yeah.
Probably by the time I was in, like, seventh grade, I knew how to not, like, how to Jedi mind yourself. Trick the person to not even think that they could mess with me.
Brett Ernst says when he's in a bad neighborhood, he'll mutter to himself as if he's a crazy person.
That's a good technique.
Just so they're like, don't fuck with that guy.
That's a good technique.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I like that. You just have to look like you are going to rob someone.
Oh.
Because then it looks like you're on that team.
That's what I realized. I was walking home from the improv once to, like, where I live near the comedy store.
Right, right.
And I was walking. It was like 3:30 in the morning. It was one of those nights we hung out there till late. You know,
yeah,
when he was still there.
It gets tough. It gets tricky over there. Yeah,
it's like super late at night. If you see people like two blocks up, you're like, what's this going to be?
Right.
Like, who's up at this late?
Right, right.
And then I realized, like, as I was going up towards these, like, two guys, I was like, oh, Oh, those are gay guys. They're scared of me.
They're scared of you. Exactly. Yeah. You're tall. You're what? Yeah. 6'5"?
6'3". Yeah, but I was like, you know, I don't feel like that. I feel like Jewy.
Either you have to like act like you're the predator or make them know that you know them. You know they're there. Like walk up to them and ask them what time it is or something like that. Or just, sort of like initiate the contact.
Isn't that the way people used to get robbed? You walk up to somebody and say, do you have the time? And then when they look to their watch, you punch them.
Right. But if you ask them what time it is, they're not prepared. Because the thing about robbing someone is it's a little bit of an adrenaline thing. It's like double dutch. And you want to do it at a certain time. And if the person sort of messes up your flow, it's like when you're about to get on stage and someone goes like, the host is like, I'm going to do 5 minutes and bring you up. And in your mind, you're like, okay, he's going to do five, and you're getting ready. And then he just brings you right up.
Yeah, and you're like, oh, you're like, I don't know.
And you get on stage, and you're like, this fucking asshole threw me off.
I wasn't ready yet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think
even though you know what you're doing, you're like, I just need 30 seconds of time to prepare.
Criminals like a little bit of a lead-in.
Oh, okay.
And you take that away from them by just walking up to them and being bold.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Because they want to rob someone who's easy. And if
they told me in Brazil. We went there for the UFC, me and Rogan.
Oh, wow, nice.
He took me, you know. But they were like, be careful, it's super dangerous. And they gave us all a bodyguard.
Oh, nice.
Well, they gave Rogan one. But they were
Rogan needs a bodyguard?
No, but they were like, the UFC was super worried about them getting kidnapped.
Oh, I see.
Those things.
Oh,
you know,
I got you.
Held for ransom. Right, so they made sure everyone got a bodyguard, all the big people.
Nice.
But we were asking about it. He goes, no, they don't. They rob old men. That's who they rob.
Yeah.
Who they can like hold up real easily. And no one's going to punch them back.
Yeah.
A woman or something.
Everything goes back to women, right? It's like being like the drunk guy at a bar who is really completely not discerning about who you bang, who you go home with.
Right.
You're going to pick the drunk chick.
Because she's, right, she's easy.
She's drunk, she's easy.
She won't be a problem.
There's no conversation needed. You know, you're not going to...
I hate it when you're trying to pick somebody up and you're just like in your head, you're like, what do I have to say here to make this happen? Should I get aggressive? Should I get meek? What's the play here? Because we both want to do this.
Right. A lot of times it's aggressive. Yeah. And I know a guy who meets girls at a club, right?
Yeah.
And does that. You see that movie? What's that movie called? Crazy Stupid Love?
Crazy Stupid Love. I think
is that.
That's a movie.
Sexy Crazy Stupid Something with Ryan Gosling.
Crazy Sexy Love? No.
Yeah, maybe that's it. Stupid Crazy Love, maybe. Anyway, and his whole thing was like, let's get out of here. Like, he'd talk to a girl for like 5 minutes and say, let's get out of here. And that worked. Everybody who does that, except he'll say, hey, you know what? Let's go to, want to go to IHOP? Like if it's a big girl, he'll be like, you want to go to IHOP?
Yeah.
And no, big girl will be like, oh, yeah.
You're not mine.
IHOP, right. I always want to go to IHOP. And then he won't go to IHOP. He'll just take them straight to his house. And then when they're like, what's up with IHOP? And he'll just be like, don't worry about it.
Really?
And just take him home and sleep with him. Like, I didn't even know that was possible, that you could leave under false pretenses.
Because at some point, the reality is you just have to make something up. I remember in college, it was like, want to come to my dorm room and watch a movie?
Right, the movie thing, yeah.
You can't
just
say, let's make out. You have to say it's about something else.
And start
hooking up. You got to put in White Man Can't Jump for like 2 minutes.
Exactly. Just so she feels like she's not a hoe. Like, it has to naturally happen, quote unquote.
Yeah.
Hold on. Is that my neighbor?
Maybe. Oh,
you want to record this? This is going to be funny.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. I'll keep it going. I'll play by play.
Hey, what's up?
Hi.
How's it going?
Hi.
Would you do me a favor? Would you set up this door, my sliding door?
Sliding?
The screen sliding door.
Okay. Like, I can't do it right now, but maybe tomorrow? Like, is it hard? Is it going to...
No, you gotta come and see it. It's easy.
Oh, well, we're taping something. Can I, maybe I'll come in, like, half an hour, and look at it?
Okay.
Because I don't even have a screen door, but I'll come and check yours out.
With the sliding door screen door that you're supposed to have.
I know, I just never, and then there wasn't one there when I moved in, so I gotta buy one.
Oh, okay, thank you.
Okay, I'll come check it out.
She asks you for help a lot?
Well, the thing is, what I've learned is crazy neighbors are only funny in sitcoms.
Yeah. It doesn't bother other times.
Not in real. Actually, that woman, I wanted you to hear that.
What did she want you to do?
Fix her screen door on her patio, I think. It's always something. Either the TV doesn't work, either she I'm being too loud, something. Sometimes she thinks things are falling on her that are not falling on her.
Oh, really?
Like, I actually painted her.
She lives alone?
Yeah. Her daughter lives close in the same complex. I actually painted her ceiling once.
Really?
And I don't do manual labor at all.
It's my job. I don't know how to do this.
But I did it because she thought stuff was falling on her. And so it wasn't like she was like,
well, like stuff from the ceiling.
Yeah. And since I live above her, she was like, what are you doing? Stuff was falling on me. And she would like had plastic on her bed,
yeah,
a tarp. And she'd be like, look, and there was nothing there. And I'm like, I don't see anything. She's like, it's there. Look. And I'm like,
I don't know what you're saying.
So, basically we all started to like try to fix this problem that didn't exist.
Yeah.
Cause she said it was falling in her eyes as she slept. So the daughter gave her these fake eye vitamins, quote unquote.
Just
yeah, like these are eye vitamins. They'll take care of your eye. You. It's all mental, right? So we're trying to I said, and I'm like, she bought this special paint and I'm like, I'm gonna paint your ceiling with this
special
thick
coating paint.
Nothing is gonna fall. And like for 2 days it worked, then 2 days later she's like, the paint didn't work and there's still stuff falling in my eyes. And I'm like, well, of course, because you know, there was never anything falling.
The paint thing was made up, but nothing's falling in your eyes. Right. If you have a problem with your eyes, get some eye drops.
So
this is why I talk to nobody in my apartment building.
That's actually not a good. That's actually a good plan. And the thing is, it's only me because I'm like people target me because I'll respond.
Right, yeah.
Like the next door neighbor, she never knocks on their door with any issue.
Really? Because she doesn't. She's not social.
Yeah. Like probably sometime in the past, the next door neighbor was like, my, you know, like, fuck off. And then, so she never, and since I've never done that, I get,
yeah,
you know.
Those saying fuck off to somebody, saying beat it, get the fuck out of here, whatever, say, it takes like a lot of like work, like in the short term.
Right.
But it solves a lot of problems in the long term.
Dude.
You know how you go to comedy clubs all the time. There's annoying people that hang out at the Improv, the Laugh Factory, and the Comedy
Store. Oh, my God. Yeah.
There's an annoying person or five in each one of those things, and they always talk to you.
That, like, open micer dude who...
Yeah, something. Yeah, or yeah, just some guy who hangs out there all the time, or just, like, whatever it is. And you want to tell him, beat it, but it's easier to just be like, oh, excuse me, I got to talk to this guy.
Right, right, right.
So and you just do it a little bit at a time.
And if you told him, beat it one time...
Then it's solved.
But the thing is, I always think that person has something to offer. Like, I don't think so, but I think maybe, like, we're going to work together. Like, I don't know. Like, not that I even care. Like, I don't want anything from them, but it's just sort of like, I don't know, like, treat everybody with a certain sort of respect. But what happens is you start bending over backwards, and they're not even treating you with respect.
Yeah, exactly. And now you're like, I'm changing my life for what? To please some guy who's annoying?
Oh, completely, completely. And, like, you see... You never hear her walk up the steps. She weighs like 90 pounds.
Yeah.
It's like she's like air. But then when she gets to the door, she bangs really hard. I don't even know how she really conjures up that strength. Yeah, it's really bizarre.
I saw Nick used to do this once with this guy, Mindy Dean, who hangs out at the Comedy Store, just annoys everybody. And no one ever told him to fuck off.
Right, right.
But he came up to us, we're all talking, like five guys in a circle, and he goes, oh man, I just saw the best show at the House of Blues. And Nick just turns like super sarcastic like, and goes, I bet you'll tell us all about it. And the guy just went, ugh, and walked away.
Is it we're Nick Swartzen like, or which
no,
Nick?
No, Nick Youssef.
Oh, Youssef. Oh, yeah, he would do that.
But we're like, thanks, man. That helped us. We
right.
sit through this stupid fucking conversation.
Dude, like I have a buddy who's a little bit like that, but he's actually now my buddy.
Yeah.
Like it never, like it was almost like I never nipped it in the bud.
So you
and then we became buddies, and he's actually okay now.
There's that too. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, but he still has his moments. Like we went to eat in Chicago, and he completely like took me to this really expensive steakhouse.
Yeah,
someplace where I wouldn't go. Then he laughed at me because I got a burger.
Yeah,
because I'm like, you know what? They bought the steak out, and they pointed at each steak and told you how they were going to cook it. And I was like, I'm not into this. I'm not into spending $50 for a steak.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just going to get a burger.
Yeah,
you can't mess that up. $12, I'm good. Him and his wife, they get these massive steaks. They're not happy with the steaks.
Yeah.
And then there's that tension, and then they eat half the steak, but then they don't. Then they send the steak back, and they get others. And it's just really uncomfortable, the whole situation. But it was funny. We laughed about it. But it's kind of like he still does those kind of things.
Those annoying things.
Yeah, it's just like, let's not spend this much money on steak.
You there know? Is that, though. If I'm shutting somebody off that I might eventually become friendly with,
right,
I'm losing something for myself.
Maybe
just because he's annoying me right now.
Exactly, exactly. And some people have that thing where they're annoying like 80% of the time,
uh-huh.
but then that 20% is actually pretty decent.
Yeah.
And so
you don't lose that either.
Yeah, do you give up that 20%?
Yeah.
I don't really think my neighbor has a 20%, but
she's all help. I need you to fix the screen door. And you're like, and when you said, I'm busy right now, she was like, what are you talking about?
You got to come right now.
Yeah.
And she saw you.
Yeah, she saw me there.
She saw the microphone. Well, she probably didn't know what this was at all, but.
Yeah. But you're like, I can't. She's like, that's not good enough.
And it's a screen door. Like,
is she just lonely? What's her deal?
Yeah, but like I said, her daughter lives right there, and her daughter really likes me because, like, everyone knows that she's a little crazy.
Yeah.
And but I kind of like put up with it, so
you know. That's a New York thing, by the way, is talking to your neighbors and stuff.
Yeah, kind of
being friendly,
kind of because everyone lives close. Because in New York, we don't have neighborhoods, so we kind of make your building like a neighborhood.
Yeah,
because you don't really. Otherwise, it's just this massive building, and then another massive building, and
yeah, and you're just like anonymous there.
Yeah, exactly. But and plus, I don't really care, but she does have a granddaughter. I could see myself down the road.
Trying to bone?
Maybe, yeah.
Granddaughter, that'd be great. And then once that breaks up, you'd be like, I'm never helping you again.
Well,
so you
I'd
know.
Have to move is what would have to happen, yeah.
That's how I feel about it sometimes.
But like
I'm going to move to get out of this situation.
And like I tell you, I rent this place out, which is really weird too, because I have my picture on the website when I go away.
Yeah.
And so... No one, like some guy in Sweden doesn't know who I am, and even people here don't know who I am, but every now and then someone will be like, hey,
Dane Perkins the comedian?
I saw you open for Dane, or uh-huh. I saw you, and then I'm like, do I have this person stay at my house? Like, when I'm just a guy, it's different than a person who, like, knows who I am. Yeah. So, ultimately, I just need to make more money so I don't have to worry about that kind of thing. But I just don't like...
Lock your gate.
I don't like having a place empty for, like, a month and... paying mortgage and, you know.
Yeah, I know what you mean, where it's like, you're wasting money.
Oh,
I'm
completely.
Gone for 3 weeks straight, I'm like, why am I paying rent on a place I'm not going to use? Completely. I can't move all my stuff out, but like, it is a waste.
Right, so if you had someone stay, you can make a little bit of the money back, or maybe all of it back, depending, you know.
I just started letting people, I'm too possessive.
Right.
So I just started letting people like use my car and my apartment when I'm gone.
Oh, nice.
Like comics don't have one or need a crashing. Right. It's like, you can use my stuff.
Well, I think the good thing about that is that like I got a buddy who drives a Benz, and I don't even know, we live in LA, so you know that person who you're like, I don't think you're doing better than me.
But you're driving
but
a car.
But you have
you are.
Benz. Yeah. Maybe you are, you know, maybe you have family money, right? But this guy, he drives a nice Benz, really like big Benz, like, you know, and it's like we can't even meet for coffee.
Why?
Because he'll park the Benz right in front of the coffee shop, and then I'm trying to talk to him, and he's looking like every time someone tries to park, he's looking.
Making sure it doesn't get touched.
Are they going to hit the Benz? Sometimes he gets out, you know.
Really?
Yeah, he tries to
like. Can't be like that.
It's like, dude, like, you have to have the kind of money, like, people who can afford a Benz. They have a Benz. They don't look at it every 2 seconds. If it gets hit, they got insurance, you know, yeah. Like, and
you don't
so
walk around with a cashmere egg.
Exactly.
Go to a football game with it.
And so this guy doesn't let go. So you renting your car, like letting your friends hold your car, it's a form of letting go. It's a form of
Yeah, that's what it is. It felt good to be like, All right, whatever happens, will happen.
Exactly.
Hopefully you'll treat it well. I know you. You're not going to be an asshole, but like.
Right.
If you get into a little dent, okay, these things happen.
I think that's the way to live, because otherwise it's like you're preoccupied with those things, and the things kind of own you as opposed to you owning the things. And when people stay here, I only worry about their interaction with my neighbor, because like...
Oh, that you don't want them to piss your neighbor off.
Or them to piss her to piss them off. Like, they're just chilling and she comes up and...
Has she ever done that? Try to ask one of your renters for help?
Yeah, I had some girls stay here, and I never met them. These girls were a little wild, because there was three of them, and I was a bit much... I think they were from Italy or maybe Portugal. And she said they were being loud. And
yeah.
I wasn't here, but she told my friend. I had a friend come and check on the place. She told him. And so that's a little
bit
of a concern.
They were all talking at midnight.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
Like, going off what a crazy lady saying.
right.
To give it some credence.
So that's the only like.
How do you feel about people fucking in your apartment? You don't care.
Oh, man. That's.
That definitely happens if someone's here for a few weeks.
That's
right?
Probably happened. That's probably happened. Well, you know, I usually don't rent out my bed. I usually rent out this place here. So, like, when my guests come, I'm like, you know, I don't, I'm like, you can sleep on that. And I don't tell them that people have probably fucked on it. That's just their deal. But in my bed, I worry about bed bugs. So that's the only thing. Oh. I got a bed bug cover on my bed. So apparently, I got it from Ross Dress for Less. So I'm not sure if this is like the top-notch, grade A way to deal with it. Apparently, it keeps bed bugs in if they're in, and keeps them out if they're out.
Okay.
So, like, if I ever had bed bugs, they're locked in, they're going to die.
Okay. Right?
And if I don't have bed bugs, they can't get into my mattress. So,
you're okay.
I just take this thing off, and I wash it, and then put it back on.
Okay.
So
I told Matt, I was like, all I ask of you is if you fuck in here.
Right.
Because at first I'd be like, don't fuck it. But then I'm like, what? He's going to do it anyway.
Right, right, right.
Which guy is not going to go for it? Be like, oh, wait, I have this apartment I'm staying in.
The only guy who wouldn't do that is a guy who was in the closet and still gay and wanted an excuse to not fuck. And he'd be like, well, I can't fuck because, you know what I mean?
I'm staying in my friend's place, so I can't. All I asked him was like, just at the end, you don't even have to wash my sheets.
Right.
Just pick the ends of the covers off the bed. Just so I know, and I'll wash it when I get home.
Oh, good call.
I don't have to sleep there that night. I'll just wash it when I get
home. That was like the code.
Yeah. I'm like, that's not too much work.
Smart.
I know you're capable of just lifting that off.
Yeah, that's smart. Me, I just wash the sheets as soon as I get home.
Yeah.
I have a mattress cover. I have the bed bug cover and a mattress cover, so you know.
Why do you worry so much about bed bugs?
Huh?
Why do you worry so much about bed bugs?
Because it's a deal. Like, I've known quite a few people that have...
That's New York shit.
I know. I'm a New Yorker. Yeah. And people are like... These are world travelers thing, so then like
people carry it with them
sometimes. Like, apparently the bed bug thing really kicked off after the Olympics. That was in Australia.
Yeah,
like everyone went to Australia,
took them back with them,
and then people brought bed bugs, and then people took the bed bugs back to wherever they were from. That's how they say it works. So even when I'm in a hotel, I don't put my luggage on the floor. I put it on that, like,
the thing pulls out with the two straps.
Right, right.
Yeah, I like that thing. And what's that for? Luggage, right?
It's for luggage, yeah. Okay. And then for dirty clothes, I keep them in a plastic bag when I'm on the road, and they stay in that bag until I wash them.
Yeah.
I don't mix them in with the...
And you don't put those on the floor either?
I try not to. But, really? But even if I do...
Man, you're worried about bed bugs.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, and you vacuum your bed, you vacuum your
sofa. I slept in a place in some casino in Canada once.
Oh, wow.
And I thought it was spiders until I heard about bed bugs. They had all these little bites around me.
Oh, fuck. Yeah, yeah.
Did a spider come and kill? But then it was like, oh.
Apparently, they like women more than men.
That's good.
So, yeah, yeah.
Like AIDS.
Right.
Do you know the stats on AIDS and giving or getting from a woman?
I know. It's really hard for a guy to get it, right?
Yeah. You have to have, like, open sores, and you have to fuck violently.
You pretty much have to fuck her in the ass.
Yeah, you got to do something that really chafe you.
Right, right, right.
And, like, she's got to not be wet at all.
I'm sorry.
Or fucking the
you have to rape her, basically, is what.
They said it was 200 times more likely that a girl gets it from a guy than vice versa.
Fuck me, man.
Yeah.
But the thing is that every time a guy gets it, you're like, you think he's gay, right?
Mm-hmm.
But maybe, but.
It's possible you don't.
Maybe not, right? Like.
I still think about that Sam Kinison bit when they're like, you know, straight people can get it too. He goes, name one.
Nah. But that was when he was alive. Maybe that was.
But that was the height of AIDS.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. In Africa, they, you know, there's only, you know, high cases of AIDS, and it's sort of like, is it a different strand, or are there more? Is there more homosexuality going on than anyone will cop to? Like, and so these guys are all down low.
You know what they do in some places in Africa? Because they have crazy thoughts of what the cures are.
Right, right.
That's what they're saying. Like, we just need to educate people. Education is the key.
Right, right.
They said in Brazil, I think it's like the lead country in like the drop-off of AIDS.
Oh, is that right?
Because they hand out condoms. They tell everybody about it.
Oh, you know? Nice.
Just
nice.
Education.
Right,
and
right.
People can protect themselves. But in some parts of Africa, they think there's a cure for AIDS, and the cure is fucking a virgin. So all that happens
that's exactly
is,
not the cure. That's
not the
that's
cure.
The exact opposite of what the cure would be.
Yeah, you're just giving it to a virgin.
Right.
So they ended up starting to rape like 12-year-olds because like, well, they're virgins. So all that happens is these 12-year-olds are getting raped and AIDS because they think, some witch doctor told them this will cure it.
That is a lot for a 12-year-old.
That's a lot to handle.
And then you got some 12-year-olds
who
like,
I'm a pre-calc, like, you know, to deal with this.
Yeah. Meanwhile, people here, they're like, all they want is ice cream after they lose a soccer match.
Just Slurpees is the biggest issue in their
right,
lives.
Right, right. You're like, yeah, see, that's that kind of thing. It's just.
Have you been to Africa?
I've been, yeah. I've been a bunch. And but I wasn't a virgin, so it was safe.
Just go around like, I'm not a virgin. Right, but you right. Sure, please don't fuck me for cleanliness.
You're walking around like Africans have to be like, this is my daughter. She's a slut.
Yeah, exactly. She gives it up on the first try. You don't want her. She's got AIDS already.
Yeah, you know, I've been a bunch. Yeah, I've been to South Africa mainly, but I've also been to Tanzania. I shot a commercial there. I shot a commercial in Tanzania.
For who? Pika?
And in Kenya. For Pika,
that sounds
yeah,
like a
yeah.
Pika commercial.
It was a Pika. It was great.
I used to do a lot of commercials.
Yeah, but then one in a while, I kind of fell off the Pika map. I don't even know if he's doing them anymore.
I think he's barely doing them anymore.
Yeah, so.
Pika was the guy for commercials. He's the director.
But when you go to TLC casting, uh-huh. Do they cast for other people? Or
I don't think so.
They only cast for Pika.
They only work with Pika.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so he was taking like a year off. They were like, I guess we're taking a year off.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
They wouldn't let me go in there anymore.
Because of that situation? Because
of that Amazing Racist thing.
Fuck, that's crazy.
They got some complaints. They did an IBM commercial for him, and then some housewives complained.
And they never talked to you about it to get, like,
no,
what you were doing?
I
or,
said, huh? Yeah, yeah. And they explained, my agent explained to them first. His producers called first, and they were like, it's joke, it's irony. This guy's not doing that normally.
Right.
It's
a stage thing.
Do you understand
the
irony of a Jew in a Klan outfit? It's like that's
right,
not
right, right.
Anyway, but like people don't get it, so they're like, "Yeah, we can't ever call you in again."
That's crazy, man. You because that's people don't
yeah,
know.
Ray, was that her name?
Huh?
Ray Mayfield, is that her name?
Yeah, it is.
And that cool camera guy who knew
Leland?
Everything.
God, Leland is the camera guy.
Fun to talk to.
That guy's good. He's like a hippie from back in the day, and just
he's so knowledgeable. And he knows 80% about everything.
It's like that's exactly who he is, right? Yeah. He knows a little bit about everything. These we're talking about Joe Picker, who's a famous. Commercial director, I guess.
Big spots is him.
I think he did the. Did he do the Macintosh one, the 1984 one?
I think
one?
So. With the hammer.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, these grand things. All the Jordan stuff and a lot
you,
of the.
You got the right
stuff.
One, baby. The Ray Charles mm-hmm. thing.
That was him.
Yeah, I think that was him. He. This is your brain on drugs.
He did that.
He did that one. That was like his one of his first
wow.
ones.
That's like. If you remember a commercial from 30 years ago,
yeah,
that's a good commercial.
This is drugs. This is your brain on drugs. Any questions?
Yeah,
that was him. And he also directed that Michael Jordan movie with the cartoons.
Because Jordan asked for him.
Yeah, yeah.
Jordan's like, that's a guy I work with. We'll just use that.
That's crazy.
He got blacklisted from Hollywood, apparently.
Yeah, yeah.
He's such an ass or something.
He did a movie with the guy from Jaws.
Schneider,
no, no, not that, not that guy. The other one, actually.
Fish.
Jesus Christ, not the fish.
It was the Universal
You know,
Studios.
The funny guy. I can't think of his name.
I don't remember who was in Jaws anymore.
But he wasn't in Jaws, actually. Oh. You know, he's been in a lot of movies with Danny DeVito. What is his name? Anyway, he did a movie with him, too. I think that's the movie that maybe
that
I
they
heard
blackballed him off.
Got him blacklisted. Yeah, yeah.
He tells people, he's the only commercial director, tells clients, like the actual, if Kia hires you to do something, like they're there, the client. Is there
right? Right.
The ad agency and the director are really handling it, but clients sometimes, you know, they're like, oh, we don't know if he tells them to get the fuck off his set.
Yeah, he curses at them,
and he's so successful that they're like, all right,
we'll go. I hate to do this to Bobby because Bobby's a good guy.
Bobby Lee. Uh-huh.
Yeah, right. I think he made him cry.
Oh yeah,
which
I
is
totally see that.
Which is outrageous because I can't picture Bobby Lee crying like he's
what.
I can't.
He's the most insecure guy I've ever met.
I know, but I can't picture him crying. Like he's more of a party dude, and he can sort of deflect.
Yeah.
You know?
We were both on a Vails for a pig commercial once, me and Bobby Lee.
Uh-huh.
And he goes, if we both get it, I'm not going to do it, because he's going to turn us against each other.
Is that right?
He's going to make us hate each other. He's going to say stuff. Meanwhile, I've worked with Pika 3 or 4 times. He's only pretty nice.
He's always... That's the thing. He's hard on everyone except the actors.
Well, Bobby told me some story about some girl showed up, some actress showed up,
uh-huh.
and she had brushed her hair differently or something.
Ooh.
And he goes, who the fuck is this? She's like, "What? I'm hired to do this thing." He goes, you look like some slut. You're not who I hired. And she went back to her trailer, cried for a while. Then after like 20 minutes came out and goes, what do you need me to do?
Wow.
And he was like, brush your hair back the other way. She goes, okay. And I was like, what do you need the slut part for?
Right, right.
How about just like, what's this hair? Go back the other way.
I think when it's said and done, I think he actually probably has a mild case of either Asperger's or...
Maybe.
Or what's that other one? Not Tourette's.
Autism.
Yeah. Something like that. Because there is a bit of just sort of like saying whatever he wants. And it's so crazy that it doesn't even seem like it's planned out. Yeah. Like, it's like that. Like, you know. But I've seen him yell at people, and it's a... I have to stifle my laughter. I laugh at things like that.
He laughs at clients and ad agency people when they suggest something and he starts screaming. You're like, whoa.
But that's the thing. I think as a director, like, I've never directed anything. But if I directed anything, I've learned more from him than anyone else. Because people try to undermine you and question your authority.
Yeah. And he has that main dude, that black guy that's like his chief in command.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. And like, it used to be Austin, I think, but Austin got sick. But really? I know you're talking about, though, the black guy. But... If it's like the Patriots, if people follow football, you only need everyone to do their job.
Yeah.
Like, the Patriots are like, everyone does their job, and so no one's out of place. It only takes that one guy to try to do more than his job, and then things start to...
up.
And with Pitka, like, if you're the light guy, you do the lights.
You don't, lights.
You don't say anything to the sound guy. Even if you detect something is wrong, you just do the lights.
Yeah.
And there's something about that makes it work. Because otherwise, I've dealt with people, especially actors, who immediately they're trying to change things out the gate. And you're like,
what are you doing?
I just need you to do what I asked you to do. Hire. I've already thought about this.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
But the best about Pitka is you get a script that the ad agency wrote and okay with the client.
Right.
And
right.
Pitka comes in and goes, no. How about instead you say something completely unrelated to the script?
Yeah, yeah.
And then I'll have to be like, okay, we'll take it, because you're always successful.
But it works.
Whenever I get that, I did a commercial with Claire Titleman.
Uh-huh.
And I had done one for him before. She goes, should we run lines? I'm like, oh, these aren't going to be the lines.
As we start shooting,
he's going to say, wait a minute.
Right, right.
The only problem I ever had with him, and it was okay afterwards, was I had to chase this golf cart, this remote control golf cart,
right,
to try to run after it like it's out of control. And I kept catching up to it. He goes, no, you got to stay like 30 yards behind. You got to stay like even behind it.
He's too athletic.
Yeah, but it was going like up a hill, so it was like going like really slowly, and I had to look like I'm running.
Oh, I see.
And he goes, I told you, don't catch up to it. And I go, well, I'm trying. It doesn't go fast enough. And he goes, watch it.
Yeah.
And I was like, yes, sir. My fault. You're the director. I'm sorry.
In Africa, he got tested with me once because I wasn't paying attention. Because that's the thing. You always have to be paying attention to him,
mm-hmm,
even when he's not talking to you. So like, he's just talking. And I gave that advice to this girl, this actress, and it's so weird. Like, literally, I said that to her, and she said, will you marry me?
To who?
To me. Like, this. Yeah. We were on a pick cassette. And she was like, what's my play here? And I was like, just always pay attention and stay in character no matter what. And she was like, oh, that's so great. Will you marry me? And I dropped the ball, of course. I didn't try to date her. She was pretty hot, too.
Really? Oh, you're in Africa together?
No. This is a different spot. No.
Oh, okay.
Africa was just me. Just me,
which
Pitka.
Which was that?
It was General Electric, where I play a doctor,
uh-huh,
and I have this portable sonogram, but it looks like a laptop. So you basically, it's called The Journey. Like, you see me in New York, I'm packing to go to Africa.
Wow.
You see me in a plane, sleeping. You see me get off a plane in Africa, and then go to different spots in Africa.
Helping people.
Well, basically, it's all this journey just to get to this one village, to help this like village, and this woman, she's pregnant, and I have the sonogram, and it's crazy.
Touches her. The Pitka commercials. I don't. It's like those are like the Olympics types commercials.
Yeah, it was
like,
the Olympics.
Oh, you got to me, man. I'm choked up.
It's like a movie, dude. And
yeah,
and like
he even shoots his stuff with the black on top and bottom.
Yeah, yeah, he does that. You know, he makes it
blue, but like it just looks like a movie.
Oh, so good. I've done a bunch of IBM spots for him too, but that one was like
IBM pays time and a half.
Yeah,
I always like. I didn't even ask for it, but like we get overtime for this?
Exactly.
Damn, it's good.
That was I made so much money on that one.
Africa, I bet.
Even shooting it. Because you fly first shooting. Class.
Oh, God.
And
did you have to fly with him or did you get to fly alone?
No, I flew with him. Like, we had a crew of three and then two ad people.
And so you got like, people there to help you? Like
a little bit, but not much. A little bit, yeah. A little bit. And we took we had Cessnas. We had two Cessnas we were flying in. So I was flying in Cessnas in Africa and landing... Not at airports, but landing just sort of like, hey, there's some grass. Land there. Just makeshift runways. Just anywhere. Just wherever there was enough land, grass or dirt, we would just land, pick up a shot, you know.
Really? That's a cool experience. And to get paid for it is like even better.
We had this white van that we had to sort of get a white SUV. We had to get the same white SUV at like four or five different locations.
So you could match?
And match it. Yeah, it was really...
Uh-huh.
And they got it, though. It was like a Toyota 4Runner or something. It was great. It was like, wow. I feel like I was a better actor then. And then I felt like I was more natural and he liked me. And then I think I just started tanking the auditions or something. I don't know. Maybe not. I don't know. Yeah, maybe I changed my hair.
Also, as people get older, it's like, I'm the same. But it's like, you're not the same. You're 10 years older than you were.
Right.
You don't
look
the same. But I see commercials now every once in a while. I don't watch much TV, but like every once in a while.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, yeah, they're how old I was when I started doing commercials.
Exactly. And you're like, they're probably just as good as I was, or I'm just as good as they are. You know what I mean? And I haven't made the transition into the father role in commercials. Like,
oh, yeah, me neither.
I don't know if I look
I
like.
I did it once, but it was like, really?
I did it, me too, one time. I don't think I look like the 20-something beer guy, drinking fantasy football dude.
You could do that.
Maybe. I could kind of pull that off. But when I go to auditions, I'm always with these women. They look like they're my aunt. They're my aunt or something.
You're
like,
supposed to be married to them?
Yeah. It just doesn't. Maybe that's just what I think of myself. Maybe I really look like their age.
Yeah.
But those are not the girls I date either, or the girls who approach me or anything. And so it's like, really? Like, I'm.
Yeah. The one I did where I was married with kids, something like Dodge commercial or something, it was the lady was 53.
Are you serious?
Young for her age.
Oh, wow.
Like, okay, you look 43, but I was, at the time, I was 35, 36, and wow. 30. It's like, but like, all right, you pay me.
And that's kind of, I think with black commercials, they do that. Usually with white commercials, the mom looks like she's like 28. Like, they usually go super young.
In black commercials, they go older?
Well, yeah, I think with black commercials, they want her to look like her mom. They don't go like Oprah, Mother Love. They don't go, sometimes they do, actually. They go a little bigger.
Who's the girl from The Matrix who was like the who saw everything?
The black lady. The Oracle?
The Oracle. Yeah, that. It would look like that.
Something like that.
Wise.
Something like that. Like, you know, like a little bit bigger, kind of don't take no crap kind of thing.
Why do they have black commercials and white commercials? They do, though, right?
They absolutely do, yeah. It's seeing a little bit of a change, but yeah.
It's weird, though. Every once in a while you see like an interracial couple a commercial, and you're just like, oh, what?
And you're like, that's,
it throws you for a second.
That's a regional. That's not a national spot.
Never that's who was out there.
Yeah, like for me, I'm just usually with these girls, I'm like, you know, I try to own it. Every now and then I get with some really hot chicks and we try to like have that banter.
Yeah.
But also I don't look like the smooth black dad. Like you gotta have a look like, you know, I look like I could be the black dude who hangs out with the white guys who, like, is in their fantasy football league
or
something.
Yeah, you could go to, like, you could meet us at the bar.
Right, I can meet you at the bar, but I'm not the, I don't know, I'm just not the black guy who, like, you know, works for the post office. So
commercials are funny because you have to read as whatever you're set up as instantly.
Yeah.
So nerds have to look like nerds. You can't be, like, a good-looking guy who happens to be a nerd. In movies, you can take 20 minutes to develop a character.
Right.
It's commercial, like, we got 30 seconds total.
It's really how you look more than anything else.
More than anything.
Yeah.
People used to ask me, like, how do you book commercials? And I was like, I just held up my wristband. Remember when wristbands were in?
Right.
This and my glasses.
Exactly.
That's it.
Exactly. And they always put me in glasses, even though I don't wear glasses.
Really?
So
hipstery look.
Yeah. That's the thing. So I think about wearing glasses just around town.
To see?
Yeah, because I've been writing a lot. When I first came to LA, people were like, do you write? And I'm like, well, I write my jokes.
Yeah.
And now I feel like I am a writer, and people don't ask me anymore, and I feel like I need to look like a writer.
Oh.
You know?
So people would think that you have that stuff to offer.
Right, because I think people see my act. It's weird, because some people think they see my act, and they go, oh, he's a really good writer.
Yeah.
Other people say, oh, he's a really good performer.
Sometimes if you perform too well, people are like, your writing's terrible. I'm like, no, my writing's good.
Right.
I always say that about the people who do like who have like no persona, and they go, and then I went into the store and
they're just tricking
people.
People
are like, what a great writer. I'm like, they have 6 jokes.
Right.
What a great writer. I did 19 jokes in the time I did one.
Exactly.
You spaced it out so much.
That's always been my problem with how people perceive Dane and how people perceive like Richard Pryor.
Like, yeah, people are like, oh, Dane's just act outs. I'm like, what are you talking about?
No, he has jokes.
What are you talking about?
Exactly.
You can repeat that shit. You can repeat the stuff Dane says.
Exactly.
And Pryor.
And like, so, but both of them get dubbed as performers.
Uh-huh.
And people lose track of how well written. Like, Dane is a wordsmith. Like, he uses these weird words that no one else but him could use in a certain way.
Bobby said that to me once. He said him and Gotsick came back from watching him at Dublin's. Uh-huh. He goes, I just figured out Dane Cook.
Oh, is
he? Like, what? He goes, he takes whatever words, any word, and he changes it to a funnier word. So if he just, if he says like, I put my hands in the dirt, he doesn't say that. He goes, I touched the earth.
Right, right. Earth. Yeah, yeah.
And you're like, that's just a weirder way to say everything.
Yeah, and he's given some thought to it. Uh-huh. And but if like, like you said, if some nerd with, you know, a plaid shirt on said, I touched the earth, it'd be like, oh, this guy's great. And so
standing still.
Well, that's what someone was telling me about. I think it was Springsteen. I'm not sure, but they were saying that, like, he wasn't, like, back in the 70s, the critics weren't really in love with him.
Yeah.
And someone asked him about it. They were like, well, the critics seem to love Elvis Costello, but they don't love you. What's going on? And he said, well, look at Elvis Costello. He looks like the critics.
Yeah. That's why, you know, alternative comics gets so much press, because the people who are booking them are all college educated.
Right. And
you're playing two managers.
Yeah.
And agents and hit people who want to be cool and you look cooler.
And they identify with them.
Mm-hmm.
And like, and I, my material holds up in those rooms. Mm-hmm. It's just that I look like I didn't get beat up.
Who didn't include them in high school.
Yeah. I look like the guy that beat them up.
Yeah.
As opposed to like, I need to look like the guy that got beat up with them.
Yeah.
But it's hard to pull that off because, like, I didn't get beat up in high school. Like, I got beat up before high school. Yeah. And then by high school, I was like, fuck that. I'm not getting beat up anymore.
My problem is always that I look like that nerd, but I'm like, I played sports all through everything. I'm a normal guy.
You have a jock aura. Like, your aura isn't, like, people can't. And plus, you're 6'3".
Yeah.
So that, like, but you don't look like you could get, you know, people could just fuck with you. It doesn't look like it.
Whenever I go to New York, though, people are like, oh, what are you, an alternative comic? And I'm like, no, what?
Right.
I'm filthy.
You're like, I work the store. Like, what's wrong with you?
But yeah. Look, especially if I wear a cardigan or something.
Right.
Fuck it.
We're always battling what we look like, ultimately. Yeah.
Have you ever heard of the Mirror Project?
No, no.
It's this theory that when you look at yourself in the mirror, when you're getting ready for the day, you don't have a part. You've got your black hair.
Right,
like,
right.
If people have parts, I guess I don't know either. But you put yourself together, your hair and whatever, based on your mirror image, which is not a real image. It's a reverse image of yourself.
Oh, I see.
And so if people are parting on the left-hand side because they look good that way, other people are not seeing it the way they see themselves.
Oh, interesting. So you have to do it the way you don't look good.
So they had people use a double reverse mirror.
Interesting.
So you could see yourself the way other people see you. It like,
that's crazy.
Two mirrors in one. And then you realize, like, oh, I'm making myself up to look not like I really do, not
right,
the best way I can.
Right, right.
And so people are relating to you in a different way than you think you look yourself.
That's actually crazy.
So they gave these double mirrors, had them mix themselves up and see how people treat them differently.
Right, right.
I don't know the whole story, but I think it's called the Mirror Project.
That's absolutely amazing.
Yeah, it is.
But I've done the glasses hipster thing, and it
changes
works.
The way people act around you, right?
I had an audition once. I had to be like a muscle guy, and I just wore a tight shirt. You know, I'm in okay shape, so I wore a tight shirt. And I swear to you, everything was different. I don't know if people thought I was gay or what, but like I could see like bums walking toward me, for lack of a better word.
Yeah.
And they would normally ask me for money, and they would just they didn't bother me that day
because you were a tight shirt on.
Yeah.
They think this guy didn't have money.
Or like they thought this guy won't talk to me. He's fucking all Hollywood with his tight shirt. Either tough or Hollywood or like everything. Like girls were reacting to me differently.
That's so amazing.
Yeah, and I think I feel self conscious with a tight shirt on. But a lot of girls, like if you dress like a, kind of like a douchebag,
you tap into
something inside them that likes douchebags.
Yeah, people say, I just realized this right now. People say like, oh, they have father issues, or they just look, the father never gave them attention. It's not that. It's that on small occasions, their dad was an asshole to them.
Right.
Not all the time, but maybe 3% of the time.
Right, right.
And that's where they're tapping into, just a few times.
To try to change that behavior.
Yeah.
So.
Or they just like, I don't know.
So I got to work on all, it's weird because like I'm thinking about in comedy, who's my circle? I want to just sort of like, I don't know. I've always been like a lone ranger. And I think that's hurt and helped me. But I have a good rapport with people, but I don't have a team, you know?
Well, you're a dude everybody likes, but like, when I started, you ran with Dr., what's his name? I can't remember his name, though.
Oh, Eisman?
Yeah, Matt Eisman.
Yeah, those are my guys still, you know?
But then they move on to like other things. Like you were talking about how you don't see Duncan Trussell ever.
Right.
It's like, as we get bigger and hang out less at comedy clubs and go more on the road and do...
Right.
And it's like...
But the road makes you like a lone ranger in a sense.
It does.
That's the thing. All comics, they don't do the road.
They just do those clubs. So like they hang out with
They just
other.
Have their team, and they're just still here doing shorts and doing all that other stuff. And we're doing it, but they're doing it probably more.
Yeah.
Because they don't have to just skip town and go to Appleton for a week.
For do nothing. I've just started like, hey, I'm here in some town. It's Wednesday. Right. I got to go back to my hotel room and do some work.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? It's definitely not a party. We're not like, we're on the road.
Right.
It's like, this is 8 weeks in a row. Get some shit done.
Exactly. Exactly. And so.
Pay your bills.
But you don't have a team, you know? And like.
So how does that hurt you?
Well, I just think in terms of like the industry.
Yeah, you have nobody saying, oh, you got to hire this guy. My buddy's really good.
Right, right.
Or like, you know, they're writing partners or they do stuff together.
Yeah, exactly. I have a small team. A small team. But it's mainly, my team is all like Asian guys on my team. Like Randall Park, who's hilarious.
Yeah.
He's an actor. He does comedy too, but he's mainly acting. And then Ray Lai. And then our friends. Actually, Matt Hill. He's a white guy. You know, that whole Rick Lee. And not all Asian. Some, but like this whole other camp of people.
People don't even.
Yeah, Marcus Ray.
It's amazing. When I started, I was like a comedy store guy. And there was Laugh Factory guys like Sully, people like that.
Right, right.
But I didn't even know we were in L.A.
Is that right?
Because you were just like no contact with them at all. Right. And we both perform five times a week in Los Angeles.
A mile away from each other.
Yeah, and nobody, I don't even know they exist.
Wow. But now you branch out.
Now everything's kind of gotten more like together, all the clubs.
Yeah.
There's overlap, so it's cool.
And I still don't do the store. And when I first used to go to the store, I don't know, I used to be like, this place is evil.
Yeah,
like, I used to feel it. And now I don't feel it anymore, which means either it's less evil
or
I'm more evil. Right.
I think as Mitzi lost her control there, or comes less, and more people come, like when Steve Burns started coming in, and all these people like, oh, these are just nice people. Nobody had to like all the people who started as door guys, like me, whatever, like, we're fighting.
Yeah.
You know. But
I was surprised to see Steve there, but Steve's a great comic.
Who? But, is easy?
No, Byrne.
Oh, yeah.
But I thought, oh, maybe he's so big that they have to use him. Or,
when he got there, he had just moved from L.A. From New York, and it was like, he was thankful to get in there. It wasn't like, if Nick DiPaolo came, and he was like, yeah, work me out if you want.
Because I like Steve, but I didn't think he had enough angst to be a comedy store guy.
It sort of changed that way, because of people like Steve Byrne.
Oh, that's great. That's great.
It became like, oh, we can also be nice to each other and still hang out here.
Yeah,
like that's an option.
I used to go to the comedy store, and I used to be like, every time I left, I'd be like, I think I'm going to have a fight with one of those guys. I think I like them, but it's like a little bit unnecessary kind of hazing kind of deal. And no one would ever know that, because I'm not the type of guy that lets you know I'm mad until it's too late.
You just take it.
Why'd
you punch me?
Right, exactly.
This is, by the way, we'll get back to Brooklyn in a second. But this is why when girls say it's misogynist there, I'm like, it's not misogynist. It's just mean.
It's just mean, exactly.
They're like, you think we're mean to women? Ask Wayne Perkins how he feels.
Right, right, exactly.
He also feels like he's been completely fucked over there.
Completely. It's just a weird vibe.
Yeah.
Well, like, I went to eat today, right, at this restaurant, and I was so happy to see this. I'm eating outside, waiting on the patio, and it's quick. They come out, we get a drink order, we order breakfast or our meal, and then next to us, two old white ladies, and they're talking about one plays the piano, and she's like 50, her piano teacher's 70, and they're just talking. And I'm looking over, and I'm like, wow, these old white ladies have been here kind of a long time now, and they haven't bought menus or anything. And finally, they give them water, and then like another 10 minutes ago before they get the menu, and I'm like, what the fuck? And I was like, you know what? If that had been me,
you'd be racist.
I'd be like, it's because I'm black.
Yeah.
They didn't come. And I'm like, well, no, they're just swamped or lax or whatever the case, because these two old white ladies – They're on no one's don't like list. And it's still, we were halfway through our meal before they even got the menus.
Wow.
And I was like, wow, that's amazing. I can't, it was like God wanted me to see that.
It's not always what you think it is.
Yeah. Because I would have completely been like, fuck this place. They don't like black people.
Sometimes
you
got to do a little more research.
Right.
I've had my friend Darren, he was from Jamaica.
Uh-huh.
So when he came to America, like his dad was an ambassador here. To Jamaica.
Oh, nice.
So, like, he spent high school here, but he didn't grow up in America. He grew up in a place with a lot of black people.
Right, right.
So, what he saw as racism, he was like, there's some, don't get me wrong, but I do see a lot of complaining.
Oh, right.
Where it's like, anytime my friends didn't get a job, they're like, it's racist. I'm like, but a black guy got the job. And they're like, oh, we didn't look at that.
Right.
You know?
Exactly.
Like, just do a little more research.
And I think that's always the burden of black, any minority. Women have that same burden. Like, the store is just like, it's just pure evil, especially if you're like, like, you know, the cellar's like that in New York. Some places just...
They're not inclusive.
They're not inclusive.
They're not looking to welcome you in.
And so you just can't take that personally when you first
I go to the cellar sometimes, and it's like, I have to prostrate myself. I'm like, hey, can I come in? And I'm a comedian. I'm from L.A.
I've never performed at the cellar.
Really? No, me neither.
And I know I have friends who are obviously big there. And
I like hanging out there, though.
Yeah, I love hanging there. But it's just, I'm not there long enough to even try.
That's the thing. It's like, you won't see me again. If I introduce myself a year from now, you're not going to remember me.
Exactly, exactly. And
I just want to have my run of the place. I don't want to even go on yet.
It would be great if you lived there. The cellar is like the East Coast comedy store.
Yeah.
But even a comedy store in London, which has no affiliation, same way.
Really?
It's hard to get in. Wow. It's like, you know.
Esty and Mitzi. It's like these are people who control, one person controls whether or not you
exactly.
get in.
Exactly. And their personality permeates the place.
Mm-hmm.
And like, it sort of like sets the whole vibe. It's like everyone is an extension of their person. It's like they're Voldemort.
Yeah.
They're like the Dark Lord, and everyone under them
has to carry on.
Falls into place. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Mitz, she used to love if people didn't like each other, if she found out.
Oh,
she'd be
wow.
like, okay, they're following each other on stage every night.
to
just to start sparks. Remember Holtzman? Do you remember Brian Holtzman?
Yeah, yeah. He's married to, well, he was married
Paula
to.
Bell.
Yeah.
He was just going out with her.
Oh, okay. Paul, okay.
But he hated following Tanya Lee Davis, that midget.
Right, hated it.
And then I remember he would always have to follow her. And then one day I was doing the lineups with her, whoever was gone, I was like filling in.
Uh-huh.
It was like Tanya, then somebody, then Holtzman. And I was like, oh. And she goes, what? Oh. I'm like, I thought you liked putting Holtzman after Tanya because he hates it so much. And she goes, oh, yeah. Yeah, switch it.
Wow.
Yeah. And he would come on stage and be like, I don't like fucking a circus up here.
Wow.
I said, oh, it's a circus. With
he would
performers.
Say that. And yeah. she would still be there.
Yeah, he didn't care.
Outrageous. I mean, some would say you grow from that, maybe.
Yeah, I guess so. Maybe. They always use that as like, I'm hazing you to help you. I'm like, no, you're hazing me because you're an asshole.
Yeah.
It might end up helping me, but that's not what you're trying to do.
I tell you, the comedy store has three rooms, and the OR, I'm a big fan of the belly room.
Then the OR.
I don't really like the main room that much, but it's...
main room's not as good. It's too big.
I don't know. I want to perform there, but my thing is, no matter what, I'm not going to change my personality, my on-stage personality at least. But maybe I would. I don't know. It's like,
no, at this point, you know who you are comedically enough.
Yeah,
you're like, oh, I'm not going to – if you want what I have to offer, then totally take me. If
right.
not, then that's okay too.
Exactly. And I wish – I mean, and the parking sucks. That's the thing. If I wasn't a regular, I got to be a regular to go there. Otherwise –
I moved so close because I wasn't allowed to park, and I was there so much.
Is that right?
I have to go within walking distance of this place because I cannot get in.
No,
she used to make me bring them hamburgers and cheeseburgers.
Is that right?
Even after like 1 o'clock when there's six cars in the lot. I'm like, come on, man.
Right.
Fuck, I hated that
But
shit.
A comedy store is a good place to start. But if you're already doing it, it's hard to restart.
Well, she told me once about somebody. She was talking about like, I forget who. Somebody was trying to go. And it was some like developed person from New York.
Right.
She was like, what are we going to do with him? He's already got his personality. I'm not going to develop him into anything.
Right.
Like, oh, that's a weird way to look at it. Where it's like, obviously they're good.
Right.
They're like, they already are what they are.
But that's what I like about her. She wanted to
building people.
She wanted to have a mark on you. Yeah. On who you are.
She was one of my biggest influences.
Is that right?
Oh, absolutely.
That's crazy. See, you know her like that. I've never...
I used to drive her around.
Oh, wow. And so she has crazy opinions about comedy, and she's seen the greatest people ever do it.
Yeah, I went back and forth once to feel like, oh, she's like God. She knows everything.
Right.
Just like people said about Jamie or that guy who died at the Stand Up New York in L.A.
Oh, Lucian. Yeah.
People are like, oh, they're omniscient, you know?
Right.
And then you realize they're just people. And then I went to like, oh, you're just an idiot. You don't know anything. And then I realized, no, you've watched 25,000 shows.
Oh, yeah. You
know. You have some level of expertise just based on that.
Right.
You've watched a lot of comedy. You can tell what's hacky and what's not. I used to see her cross people's names off the list when they were showcasing. The record was 3 seconds.
Wow.
They started and she was like, no, and just X their name off.
She could tell if you weren't coming from that place that was...
I was like, that's so rude. But now it's like, you look at somebody, you know, like, oh, you just started. No, you're not what we're looking for.
Right.
You can tell right away.
Yeah. But I think the bad thing is if you go to the comedy store, as a comic...
You get lost there.
And you've been doing it a year or two somewhere else and you have your best 5 minutes.
Yeah.
It's not necessarily the 5 minutes you want to do in front of Mitzi. You may want to just... have fun, but it's hard to do that. It's hard not to do your best.
Yeah.
You know?
You're trying to impress her.
Right.
I always feel it's tough to go in front of club owners just because it's the only time I get nervous, really.
Right.
And my theory why is because none of us trained in this. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's
so
true.
So I sort of feel like they're going to know that I'm a fraud.
Interesting,
that I don't know what
so
I'm doing.
They've seen so many comics.
Yeah. Even though, like, nobody knows what they're doing.
Right.
We're all just figuring it out.
Either that or they're going to be like, oh, this guy's good, and I've seen my fair share.
Yeah, and that would be wonderful.
Right.
But you get nervous because you want that.
Yeah.
Let's get back to Brooklyn.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah.
It's all right. No, it's normal. I always get sidetracked. Can I go to the bathroom real quick?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Big, I'm going to pause this.
Okay.
Might or may not come. All right, we're going. I just looked at that map, by the way, in your bathroom.
I didn't
see the first time.
That's what's up. You see that, huh?
Yeah, and then I could see where Coney Island was. I was looking all the way right, but it's down.
No, it's way south. In fact, Coney Island's so far south, and it's kind of weird. I used to get Philly stations growing up, Philly TV stations.
Really?
Yeah, it was close enough.
That close to? Wow.
Yeah, yeah. It's kind of like, and it was like Philly used to play slightly different things. I've always had a closeness to Philly, I think, because of that. Yeah.
Nice.
And so what's in my bathroom is a map of New York City subway map.
Yeah.
And I have one of the London Tube, but I haven't switched out yet.
Yeah, I got one from Heffron. It was like a Jack Daniels one, and I was like, all
right.
But I've just had it
for
like a year.
I love that map. I tell people, sometimes people will call me from New York, and I'm like, how do I get something?
And you'll go to your bathroom?
Yeah, I'll go to the map.
Oh, that's cool.
Bathroom, yeah.
Why do all the poor people live all the way south towards Coney Island? Is it just far enough away from Manhattan?
Well, yeah, that's the thing. Like, the poor people, there was really no pattern to it, actually, because Harlem is in Manhattan.
Oh, yeah.
North Manhattan. And
there's some rich areas outside Manhattan, too.
Yeah, yeah. And even like, the Bronx, way, way up north in the Bronx was kind of, you had some rich areas.
Yeah.
And the South Bronx is poor. So it's really Brooklyn now, like Brooklyn used to be sort of like, yeah, like as you went more into Brooklyn, it would get worse.
Yeah.
And now it's kind of changing, like.
Yeah, it seems like it's different. Like in the Beastie Boys time of Brooklyn.
Yeah, yeah.
It seemed like you don't fuck around with Brooklyn.
Well, like you wouldn't go to like Coney Island. You wouldn't go to Bed-Stuy. East New York.
And that's why I was always bad.
These are all neighborhoods that are like almost like their own towns if they were in another place. But now it's kind of like Williamsburg is completely hipster out now.
What was it then?
Back then it was probably, it was tough. It was mainly like either like Latino, black, maybe even white, but tough. And then some like a Jewish neighborhood too. Like it was both.
Oh, really?
Crown Heights also was both.
Crown Heights, I know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So you grew up there. Remember when, were you there for the Crown Heights riots?
I was there when maybe this a Jewish guy was driving a truck and he may have hit a black girl. Something crazy happened after that.
I don't know if this is right or not, but this is what my memory of when I was little is a Jewish kid, a Jewish boy, and a black girl got hit by a car.
Right.
And they had a Jewish ambulance service, like separate from the city. They all pay them, whatever. And they came and picked up. And went to the hospital with just the Jewish kid.
Oh,
left
wow.
The girl there.
I don't know. Maybe. That sounds like that could have happened.
Yeah. And it was like, they have no responsibility to anyone. They're just hired. But it's
right,
like,
right.
People are like, you just left this girl to die when you could have taken her to the hospital.
Right.
Like, there's enough room for both of them.
Well, what was the regular ambulance, I guess, is the
thing?
They're
just slow.
Wow.
911 is a joke.
That's crazy. Get up. Know? Get down. Yeah, it's something like that. I remember something like that happening and
And they all hated each other.
Yeah. It's crazy because it was like, it's always been like not love, hate, but sometimes it's good, sometimes it's not as good, like the Jewish and black
relations.
Sometimes
they really get along.
Yeah, yeah.
Where they're like, yeah, we're both on the outside.
Yeah, sometimes it's like that, and it ebbs and flows almost. And it depends on like what rebel rouser is sort of saying what thing at what time.
Trouble.
Yeah, yeah, that
when
sort
you
of
have
thing.
A presidential candidate saying, calling it Jaime Town, you're like, well, this is going to be weird now.
Yeah, it's like that. That's, and he's not from New York, so.
Remember that?
Yeah, that's crazy.
He called it Jaime Town on a, not even like, oh, my mic's still on. It was like, no, he said it in front of the microphone.
Well, he said Obama should be neutered.
Why?
I have no idea.
Is it recently?
Yeah, like before Obama won.
He should be neutered?
Neutered.
Because genes are bad?
I don't know. He already had two kids. I guess he just thought
nobody
he wasn't.
Nobody should be neutered. What are you talking about, Jesse Jackson? What are you
That's
talking
what he said.
About?
And so when he was crying after Obama won, it just was like,
I was crying out of happiness and like, you're putting on a show.
Yeah. I mean, maybe. I don't know. It was weird. It was just weird that he said that. And maybe he didn't know he was being. I don't know. I'd have to talk to him. What does that mean exactly? Like, I've never.
Right. You want to do more research.
But I was doing a show. We're going to get back to Brooklyn. I'm doing a show, and I do a joke about saving, like helping my race and helping race relations.
Yeah.
And I'm going to help by doing porn. That's what I say in a joke. Because I say, the theory is that black dudes and pornos are very unlikable. They're well endowed, and they scare people.
They're mean.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
take that dick.
Right, right. And so I want to do porn and just sort of like, just be more like a regular dude. And you're like, okay, this is not so bad. He came quick, and you know what I mean? Like,
yeah. And, you can do with that. That's nice. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, you know, I go through the joke. I'm not doing an exact joke. And it was fine. I was in Appleton doing it. And I listened to my set. I don't know if you ever had this. And I heard a heckle that I didn't hear when I was on stage.
Oh, right, because you left your mic in the back or something?
Yeah, and yeah. I think it was a table of black guys who happened to be there. And they were like, shame on you. Shame on you.
They said shame on you?
Yeah, and I didn't know what that meant. And I'm like, I felt really upset because I'm like, I didn't address it in the moment, which I'm not sure if I would have, but I could have talked to him at least after the show.
Yeah.
Like, I wanted to defend myself because I'm like, not shame on me. What the fuck are you talking about? Like, I'm simply sort of picking on guys who do porn.
Yeah.
And I'm making a ridiculous, because basically in a joke I go, every place where they hate black people are places where there are no black people.
Uh-huh.
So they have no reason to hate us. But what do they have? They have black porn. And it's scaring the hell out of them. You know, like that's the premise. And so it's a ridiculous premise with a ridiculous solution.
Yeah.
And so I don't know why they were saying shame on you. Like, I'm kind of like,
I love though when you hear something, you're like, look, you're not going to get to me, but like what you're saying, I just want to know what you mean because I'd love to have a discussion with you right now.
Yeah, like why? Because maybe he's thinking,
you think
I don't,
it's selling out my race. Do you, yeah, what is it you,
like,
want to know?
He,
right,
thinks I don't understand the historical thing. Like, okay, maybe black men were, you know, killed because of their sexual prowess. I'm not sure.
The Mandingo idea.
But what I'm saying is, that doesn't mean that now we have to play that up solely. Like, that doesn't mean I want to be defined by that. And that's the whole point of the joke, is that don't worry about me in the Mandingo sense. That's between me
and... I'm just
and,
a dude.
Yeah.
I'm not black,
and
man.
And the girls I may or may not fuck.
Yeah.
I don't need to sort of, like, wear that on my sleeve. And that's what these porno guys do.
Yeah.
They... It's like,
wasn't
that's...
Wasn't our name Mandingo?
Oh, yeah. There's one named Mandingo. There's one named... There's all different types of names, but they're all like ridiculous. They're all like, because it's not intimate about porn. They're all like playing up the stereotype to the nth degree.
Because that's what people want.
That's what people want.
People want that in, right, in spades.
And so that's the joke. Sorry. And that's the thing is, like, when this guy was like, shame on you, and I'm not sure if it was because the crowd was mainly white, but I would do it in front of a black crowd.
They said shame
crowd
on you, like, in a serious manner, or just like...
That's the thing.
Shame on you!
And that's the thing. I don't know. I had no context. I just heard it a few times, and I'm like, and it was at that joke, and I'm like, fuck, now I'm... And it was a really good set.
Yeah.
And I was like, you know,
so you know you have them on your side.
Sometimes I listen to bad sets, but I like listening to good sets. I don't believe you learn more from fucking bombing. I think that's wrong.
Yeah, people used to always tell us that, huh?
That's wrong. Because you learn more from doing well, because when you do well, that's when you're at your best. And it's like a portal for new tags
and
new
jokes.
I
want to match that.
Yeah, exactly.
Those sets.
Like, exactly.
I do that bit right.
So, you know, I'm working out. I'm doing Taibo in my room in the condo while that set is on, and I'm feeling good. I'm like, oh, yeah, my timing was pretty good on those jokes. Then I hit a shame on you thing, and it's like... It was such a buzzkill. Like, what the hell did he mean by that, you know?
Yeah.
Like, and the thing is, so the next day I do the joke, and now I'm, like, qualifying it. I'm saying, hey, because I'm, like, now worried about I may be selling people out on this joke.
Right.
Like, what percentage of the population does porn? 0.01? Like, less than comedy, even. So, I don't know. I felt like... All right, I guess I got it. And the joke kills, especially when I get to the part about my porn, and it's a little bit dirty, but I'm like...
Situations are weird where it's like, those guys don't think about you at all anymore. They barely remember you, but you're like, fuck.
Right. Well, because
it's
like...
You keep thinking about it. It seems get to you.
It was enough for them to call out, and it's like... And I'm hypersensitive to it, because it's...
You're like, shame on you for what? For saying that I don't want to be, like, domineering in a porn?
I guess... I don't know. I want to take the focus away from the black man's prowess. And if that means you have to act a little bit less sexual, in a way, that's sort of like a mental neutering.
Yeah,
But to me, it's like, take that off the table, because it's like, it's an intimate thing between you and one or two other people, whoever you date. So it's not even something that, like, I'm not saying walk around and act like you don't have a dick.
Yeah.
But I'm saying, like, when guys like grab their dicks all the time. Yeah. What are you doing? Like, you have your dick in your hand. Why do you? Why? Well, why do you have
happening.
That? Yeah,
we don't accept that in society.
And so at some point, it's not, you can't blame them. It's like you're the one bringing attention back to your dick.
You're carrying it on.
Every rapper has a 10-inch dick.
Let
you know what I mean?
Let it go.
Let it go. And then maybe they'll let it go. Maybe not. But yeah. At least you are not focusing. You're not refocusing.
Yeah, you don't
them.
Do black comedy at all.
No. But I do some, like if I do a
you're
black
cool
show.
Black man. What, you up it?
No, I don't up it, but I do it from the perspective of a black person. So, like, if I'm doing a black show, I can't say black. I got to say us, we, me.
Oh, right.
And just by doing that, it takes on a slightly different context in a sense. Mm-hmm. So, like, if I was doing a black show, I'd be like, I'd say, like, you know, because when we're in, because in Brothers and Pornos, you know, I would just be inclusive, but I would still do that joke basically the same way. Just
slightly changed.
Just inclusive, yeah. Because, you know, as a black person, you can't be on a show with black people saying black people. Like, you're not one of them, like, you know what I mean?
Yeah. right. It's me. Who are you talking to?
Yeah,
right,
exactly. Exactly. Like, that was so weird when they said that. I was like, dude, like, what the? And
Mitzi said this in terms of how much the that thing of the black sexualization, like, bothers white people. I was picking her up once, and normally it was this guy, Marcus Molina, who was supposed to pick her up on Saturday nights. I just drove her if he was sick for a little while.
Right.
And Marcus wanted me to pick her up that Saturday. I'm working there anyway. It doesn't matter. And she goes, where's Marcus? And he goes, oh, his friend, this problem. It's like his friend caught his girlfriend cheating on him.
Right.
Like, he caught her cheating on him. Like, he walked in.
Not Marcus, but his friend.
Yeah, his friend. So he's going to be with his friend. And she was like, oh, that's terrible. And I was like, yeah, there's nothing worse than that. Than finding your girlfriend fucking somebody.
Right.
And she goes, I'd be worse if it was a black man.
Why?
And
right.
I was like, Mitzi.
Right.
And then I was like, nope, you're right.
Yeah.
You're right.
That's right. And when I'm on stage, I'm playing with that. I'm because I could not bring it up at all.
Yeah.
But I'm bringing it up to play with it, toss it around and see.
Say, hey, we're not all like this.
Right.
This idea you have in your mind.
Or maybe we are, like, just sort of like, I'm aware of it and I don't want you to focus on it. That's the whole thing. Because some people are going to still think about it, even no matter what you do. And that's why I just didn't know why that guy said shame on you, because it's sort of like,
it was black people that said it?
I think. And I'm not even sure of that, right?
Because you're throwing off voices.
Right. But I think based on where the microphone was and based on those guys. And I remember seeing them after the show, and I remember them looking at me and not really giving me my props.
Yeah, we read into so much.
And that's why I don't like selling CDs at the end of the show. I do it sometimes, but I don't want that extra judgment. Because you're standing there like, I just made you laugh for 45 minutes. Tell me how good I was. And I'm like, I got the laughs.
Yeah, that's good enough.
It worked.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's weird. People get insecure. People are like, hey, I thought you were really funny. And you're like, oh, thanks. That made me feel better. But then you're like, I heard, if there was 100 people in there,
right,
I could hear 70 of them laughing. So I knew one of those was you.
Yeah.
But hearing it live, it should make me feel better or worse.
I've had people laugh throughout the whole set.
Yeah.
And come out and be like, oh, you were good. You were okay. You know, like that. I'm like, come on, really?
Motherfucker.
Yeah. But like, the best thing happened after that show.
What?
Some black people were in the crowd the next night in Appleton. I didn't know they were there. And they come walking toward me. I'm selling CDs. Or I'm just shaking hands, whatever, giving out my email cards. Yeah. And the brother, he walked right past me, like almost like with a stern look, like he wasn't into me. And then he got almost past me and he said, I'm just fucking with you. I was trying to act like I didn't like you. Came over, gave me a big hug.
Yeah.
And that made me feel great, because the night before, these guys were screaming shame on you.
Yeah, and the same material. So like, yeah.
And these guys were from Chicago. So that was like, fuck yeah. Like, these are black dudes from Chicago, from the South Side, who just, you know, live in Appleton now.
I wonder if there's some of that in like small towns like Appleton, where if any race feels, I can see Italians too, have to like overly Italian it.
Oh, completely.
Overly black. They show like, this is who I am.
Completely. You see it, because when I went downtown, and by the way, downtown Appleton,
yeah,
like so many hot chicks, like more than you would think.
I heard that club is amazing.
It's a great club.
What's it called?
Yeah, the Skyline.
Skyline.
Yeah, it's great. And like, you see the black guys there, and you could tell that they're like originally from blank, Milwaukee, Chicago, Indiana, wherever they're from, and now they're in Appleton, and now they're like really overplaying the black thing a little bit. And I'm like, dude, that's not why you came to Appleton.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
to be in it, just to be yourself.
I get it. You don't want to lose your identity, and that's always tough.
But that's not all of who you are.
It's not all of who you are. You're just a guy in Appleton, and
you like Hondas. Right. That's part of who you are too.
Right.
It's nothing to do with race.
Exactly. Exactly. And you know, the guy on the show with me was my feature was a Jewish guy, and he was, you know, really good. And you know, he's developing, so I didn't want to. But I could see that his set was sort of created from the perspective of a Jewish guy, who's not around a lot of Jewish people.
Yeah, if you do in New York, you can't be the Jewish guy unless you're like Avi Lieberman or somebody super Jewy.
Right, right. And he's from Minneapolis, so probably not a massive Jewish community
this is
there.
Different for you, but just wait till you get. That's how I feel about actresses when they move to Hollywood.
Yeah,
when they're like, "Yeah, I'm sure you're the hottest girl in your town of Wichita."
Right, right, exactly.
But this is L.A. and you're a six here.
Exactly, and that's why when I do black rooms, I know that I have to. But the thing is, I only have.
But you're really not a black act at all.
I only have at most 20%, like maybe 20% of my material even
it's flavored, like
even
I am black.
Touches with race. Like even race is maybe 20-30% even mentions race.
Yeah.
And that's probably not even that high.
Yeah.
So just on those jokes, I have to be. And then the rest of the stuff is just sort of like anyone can laugh at this. I'm not even. Yeah,
commercials are too loud.
Whatever it is. I'm not even talking about race potholes, at all.
Yeah.
And commercials are hella loud. I'm glad you said that. Do you have a joke about that?
No.
You should write a joke about that.
That's something I just talked about. They some congressmen try to get it like lowered, like legally.
It's horrible.
It's annoying.
Because you have to keep turning the volume up and down.
Especially when someone else is like in the other room. And you're like, shh, quiet.
Right.
Like, why are you doing this? Keep turning the volume up and down. Then the show starts and you're like, I can't hear anything.
I can't hear anything. Yeah. It's really weird that they would.
To get your attention.
They've probably done some study.
You're going to pay attention.
Yeah, they've done some study. Huh. And now with TiVo and people, or DVR, TiVo lost, huh?
Did it? I guess it's not around. People still call it TiVo. No, people call it DVR.
Yeah, TiVo lost because TiVo was satellite.
It was like the new
was, one. Yeah, and then the cable sort of
Napster
said.
Napster lost. TiVo lost.
Because cable just was like, you know what? It's called DVR now.
Yeah.
And that's it. So TiVo lost. Yeah, Napster lost. What else lost? MySpace lost.
MySpace lost. So let's get back to it a little bit.
Right.
So when did Williamsburg change, or how did it change?
I think it became the factory, like the west of Manhattan used to be sort of like Chelsea.
Yeah.
Which is all warehouses and stuff. Even though New York is super populated, there were still these small pockets that, like, so a block or two were. With not much going on. Williamsburg had that area too. And then, like, hipsters started to move in.
Was it because it was cheaper there?
Initially, yeah.
Right. That's how downtown LA always is. So,
right.
There's some super cool artists and stuff that live down there.
Yeah.
Amongst the fucking animals.
But the thing is, it's not so cheap now. But, like, the real, even this neighborhood where I live in now, the real pioneers moved into downtown LA like 8 to 10 years ago. Someone's phone is off the hook. You hear
that? Here,
no, I don't even have a home phone. The real pioneers moved to LA. Moved to downtown LA 8 to 10 years ago. And you're right. They just.
Time gentrification starts, it's too late.
It's too late. Exactly.
Rents are
That's
high.
Exactly what it is. You have to be that brave soul who
they're
really.
Yeah, move into a place where I'm the only one that looks like me.
Yeah. And that's tough. I mean, it's weird because I'm trying to do that here in Highland Park. Because, like, Mark Maron lives in Highland Park.
Mm-hmm.
Maria Bamford.
I had a girlfriend that lived here.
A few people. Because this is mainly a Latino neighborhood. But, like, and, like, there's a gang and, like, the black-brown relations aren't cool. So when I first moved in, I was dating a girl. And, like, I moved in, right? And the next day, she just showed me all these newspapers. And she was like, they're just killing black people.
What?
Random black. And I was like, fuck, I just moved in. Like, because where I live, like.
Lease.
No, I bought this place.
Is yours?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, wow.
I mean, I got it really cheap. I could sell it. I'll never lose money. Because I got it after the market crashed.
Nice.
But like, I was like, fuck. And she was like, move out right away, sell it. And I was like, okay, let me get my bearings. Cause,
see if it's really this bad.
Yeah, and I've never felt like, I'm from New York, so where Latinos and blacks live together.
Yeah.
So it hasn't been that bad.
There's also some poor areas that aren't crimey. They seem like the same.
Right, right.
But like there's some Latino neighborhoods, like if you go down Vermont,
yeah,
you're like, ooh, this is, you're like, no, it's fine. These are nice Mexicans.
Well, also sometimes
change your tire if you get into an accident.
I think this is the kind of neighborhood where there is a prominent gang. They may not be as prominent as they were, so it's sort of like if there's some bad to be done, it's going to be done by them.
Just that,
And you kind of know. I think everyone else kind of sort of like you don't fuck around here.
Yeah.
Because this is, that's what we do.
How, you know? Like, okay, so how, in Brooklyn, how bad was it? Like, were there big neighborhoods? Were there, like, lots of it you just can't go? Like, it's, I get scared in New York. I feel could like go, I'm in a place.
Brooklyn is a lot better than it used to be.
Yeah.
I can go anywhere in Brooklyn, but yeah, growing up, we didn't have a gang problem. Like, there was a gang problem before my time. During my time, we had a massive drug epidemic, but no gangs. It was weird.
Yeah, but drugs bring crime.
Oh,
if I got to get a fix, I'll rob you for $30 it'll take.
Crazy crime. But I still think growing up in New York is better than, like, Chicago.
Better in what way?
New Orleans. I think there's just more, there's still opportunity. Like, you can still be a kid from the streets in New York.
Yeah.
And if you play it right, you can avoid all that. Way more than you can in Chicago. Like, I don't...
Really?
I think it's really hard in other places, in Gary, Indiana, and...
Where it's really bad and you have no choice.
Yeah, and in New Orleans, you know. Because something about New York, you just need... And Chicago should be this way, but I don't know if it is. But New York, if you had $2 back in the day, or $1.50, whatever it was, then you could get on a train
and get
then you could go to Manhattan. So, like, if you were, like... Say you were, like, a freaky dude and you lived in Brooklyn, you were either... gay or you were a skateboarder or something that didn't fit in
with Brooklyn,
you could, you know, if you could get a job in Manhattan
and go be out of there and be in your element,
just kind of be there, and then you just have to kind of sneak home at night and sleep. I mean, there's no way to live, but you could do that.
They were talking about the problems of the projects in LA, or I guess the ghettos, whatever. They said it's way easier on a certain level in LA, because here in the ghettos, people still own houses with yards.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
So if you have to watch your kids, you can be like, stay in this fucking yard.
Exactly.
And they can play and they can be okay and do things, and they don't have to be amongst the people who are bad.
Right. Right. But you have to really keep them on a short leash.
Yeah.
And you know, New York has a little bit of that, but yeah, but mainly, and that's why when you come to LA, when you go to Compton as a New Yorker, you're like, this is Compton. There's palm trees everywhere.
Wait till nightfall.
Yeah. Yeah. You get that, but it's still like.
Yeah, it's nicer.
Yeah, in New York, it's like just a massive building and people living in it. Like, I remember...
People breaking into each other's apartments, right?
Oh, yeah, where I lived.
Fuck, that's what I'm scared of in New York. I just think I'm definitely going to get robbed.
No, but there's security there, too, because it's hard to rob an apartment. Like, you have to... You know, like, people do it, but it's hard to, like, take someone's TV. Because someone else might come out the hallway. It's, you know, it's not... But people still try it, and... Like, in where I live in Coney Island, the toughest buildings were Cary Gardens. They were tough.
Cary Gardens?
They were these projects. And like,
Gardens is a bad place to live.
I wouldn't even go inside the buildings unless I was with my buddy, because he had a lot of family.
So he'd be untouchable?
Well, yeah, people sort knew. Of like, but like literally he had cousins that would try to beat me up. But not when I was with them. So if I was with them...
But even later when they knew you knew him, they were still like, now you're unprotected?
Yeah, yeah, kind of. Oh. It was touch and go. But they wouldn't beat me up. Like they would just shake me down for some money. Like, let me get a dollar or something. You know what I mean? But yeah. But he's my buddy, and he actually saved me. Like, I really think he made my life more livable.
Really?
Just by knowing him, because he had a massive family. And so...
You had a place to be.
Yeah, I just had to like fight that much less.
Yeah,
you know, and but that building, like you, like there were certain staircases you couldn't go down that staircase because that's the one where people are doing drugs.
And they hung. So you're like, why would you go right by them? They're gonna do something.
Right, you got
to
go down this other staircase or take the elevator or maybe not that elevator. Like,
I used to have a joke about that when they were like, when you're waiting for the elevator and someone's like, just take the steps. Like, that's where you get raped.
Right. No. No. You don't want to take the steps
in like a building.
No. No. Certain steps, especially if you live really way high up. But it's weird because in a way I feel like it wasn't bad, but in a way I feel like it was. Like pee, there'd be pee in the elevator sometimes, and it'd be like...
Who pissed in an elevator?
And it wouldn't necessarily be a dog. It might be a drug addict. Like, it just... That kind of thing existed. And it's weird because, like, you would see people who lived in the hood who had, like, a nice car or their apartments were a little nicer, and you felt like... That means you probably have enough money to live somewhere else.
Get out of here, yeah.
But not live as nice. I would always take that option.
Live elsewhere.
Yeah, elsewhere with a black and white TV.
Have a studio in Beverly Hills.
Right, right.
Rather than a fucking six bedroom in
Absolutely,
Compton.
Absolutely. But I mean, a lot of people made it out of where I live. Like, I tell people, two of the kids in my first grade class, and my sixth grade class as well, two of them went to Stanford.
Really?
It's outrageous.
That's a weird term to say, like, made it out. As right. if you're somehow, like, right. in that prison in Batman, you know, where it's like...
But seriously, like, the people who made it out were really smart, really, really smart kids who kind of, like, just kept their nose clean.
When you don't get out, what happens? You just stay there for the rest of your life and die and just stay part of that community and that.
Yeah, but you can stay there and live a good life, though. You don't have to. You can just sort of like. Like the people who stay, they make a difference. And sometimes I feel bad about that because, like, there were guys who ran the youth. Yeah, like some guys stayed and they ran the youth basketball. Right. And so they kind of did that, or they worked in the Boys and Girls Club or whatever, you know. It's that's the thing. If you take out the violence, the hood is not a bad place at all.
It's okay.
Right.
It's just poor. Poor is okay. It's just
poor is okay.
Crime.
There's like a lot of love. There's people that go to church. There's people helping each other.
I see a bunch of people playing double dutch on the sidewalk.
Yeah, it's
like,
laughing.
Nice.
It's beautiful. And the only reason you wouldn't want to raise your kids there is just that random violence that could happen. And that's the only thing that makes the hood. Other than that, the hood is actually pretty sweet. But
I went to school on 185th in Amsterdam for a year.
Oh, nice.
Yeshiva University.
Yeah, yeah.
Anti-ghetto. It's like a couple nice blocks, and then you can't go outside.
Right.
All my friends are too scared to even daytime walk around. But there was a Walmart like 5 blocks away, and you go out there, and it's so alive.
Right.
Spanish Harlem was so fucking alive.
Yeah,
people
playing
Three Card Monte, and music's going, people cooking paellas on the sidewalk.
Yeah, yeah. Spanish Harlem is dope.
Fuck.
Yeah.
It's warm. It's amazing there.
It is.
But then you hear gunshots at night.
And that's the thing, and that's why I can't live there.
Right.
Because even if you make it out, even if you always have an affinity for it, but you're like, I couldn't risk it. I couldn't, especially if you have kids. You couldn't. Yeah. Like I heard Mike Tyson talk about it. You just couldn't take them back there, even though.
No, he grew up there, and
it made you what you are.
Yeah,
it completely made me what I am. But like when I like every now and then, like even at the Comedy Store, like when comics haze me, it's always funny because I'm always like, unless you're gonna beat me up, then I can really take anything you're gonna say to me because it's kind of like
really sticks and stones, like for real.
Yeah, yeah. Like dealing with guys who are like out of prison and things like that.
They want to hurt you.
Absolutely.
God.
Yeah. But
when people say like it made me who I am, it's like, yeah, but something else would have made you into something else.
Yeah.
It's also plenty fine.
If I wasn't from the hood, I may have gone the wrong way and just become a drug addict because
you may have gotten into coke.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
completely. Or, you know, bringing weed to, you know, like selling weed, something crazy.
Yeah.
Or if not, I probably would have been like Ivy Leaguer. Like,
you could have been a doctor.
Seriously,
also.
Yeah, yeah. Actually, my brother is a doctor. He's I guess I can say he is a doctor. He's doing his residency, so he has to take
on the way.
He has to take his boards, and he grew up on Roosevelt Island, which you'll see is on that map there. He's like 11 years younger than me, so he grew up in a place that's
in Rhode Island.
No, Roosevelt Island in New York. It's just like that much better, and I think that made.
Is it off the right side?
It's in the East River.
Oh.
You know, you ever see Spider-Man at the end, the first Spider-Man? And they're on that trolley car thingy.
Yeah, that's from...
That goes to Roosevelt Island.
Oh, really? And do people live there?
Yeah, yeah. It's underneath...
it's a nice place?
It's decent. Yeah, it's not... It's like...
You can't take the bus there.
You can from Queens.
You know what I heard about the way New York was built? Is they had the double-decker buses that would take people from projects into Manhattan.
Oh, wow.
And the guy who was designing the streets made the overpasses low enough that buses couldn't get under those underpasses.
Oh,
to
wow.
Keep them over there
and us
over here.
That's great. That's great.
Yeah. Well, planned racism.
Well, New York is so great, too, because it's like that old money is there.
Mm-hmm.
And it's sort of like everyone lives together in New York. It's kind of it's a melting pot for sure. Everyone's on a train. But then there's that old money that they're there, but you don't really mingle with them. They
stick to themselves.
They're like in the high rise up. They have a doorman. And the doorman gets a cab for them, and they go right into the cab.
Do they have to walk the dogs and stuff? They don't do that. They have dog walkers.
They might. But it's like they live in the city, but their exposure is a little limited, and you don't see them, but they control everything. It's really weird.
And they might talk to people in their building, because those are also nice,
like if you read The Great Gatsby or something, you know.
That type of person.
Like, I work for the census.
They all vacation together. Did you really?
I used to work for the census a long time ago. Me and my mom did it one summer.
Wow.
And I remember going into this one, you know, high rise, doorman and everything. And this lady was like Peter Falk's mom.
Yeah.
And she just, this is, you know, she lived there. And it just, and like, this is like fucking like a long time ago. And the apartments were like over $1 million then.
Really?
Yeah. Like, they were like, this is like, when you thought $1 million was like, that's it, I never have to work again. These apartments in like maybe 1990 were already $1 million.
Wow.
Yeah. On the east side.
Somebody says, like, I'm going to buy an apartment in New York, like, what?
Yeah, an apartment.
So much money. And then when you hear about Woody Allen, it's like, I'm just going to buy 3 apartments and knock down the walls and make it one big apartment.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, that is another level of cash.
I think Conan did that.
He really?
Had like a floor. And that's, but it's so
How
crazy.
How do you sell that? Only to another rich person.
Yeah.
Or somebody's like, yeah, I'll split it up into 4 apartments.
Right, exactly. But the crazy part is that it's an apartment, but New York is such a great city that you're like, you know what? I don't even care.
Where would you have me live? You know me a little bit. Do you think I should live somewhere in like the East Village?
In New York?
Or West Village? Or do you think I should like go to Brooklyn? I'm torn between those two things.
At this point?
Yeah.
Oh, it's a really tough call. I would have you live in Brooklyn.
For a while, I was like, it's got to be Manhattan. Then this guy, Matt Edgar, was like, who are you going to hang out with there during the day?
I would have you live in Williamsburg in Brooklyn. But no. Oh, you know where?
Fulcheron lives.
You know where?
What? Queens?
Astoria, Queens. That's where I would live.
It's gross there.
No, a lot of comics live there, though.
Yeah.
I mean, if you like Greek food.
I like all food. Everywhere, there's tons of food.
Okay, well, I would say, here's my, for you, Williamsburg, maybe first. Do you like hipsters? Are you okay with them?
Yeah, I like hipsters.
So Williamsburg... Then I would say Astoria second.
Really?
It's really close to Manhattan. And then parts of Manhattan.
But I like, when you were there, were you doing comedy there?
A little bit. I was in Boston, but okay. A little bit, yeah.
I like the idea of stumbling home drunk or whatever, like after you do a couple
Astoria.
Spots in town, and then like just get home.
Well, here's the thing about
to
Astoria.
To me, that's Manhattan.
But Astoria, you're right. Astoria, you can't do that necessarily. You either wait for the train for 20 minutes. Because, you know, late night, it takes like 20, 30 minutes. Or you split the cab. But it's just Astoria. So the cab only has to go right over the bridge. So even from like, say if you're at the Strip.
Yeah.
A cab from the Strip. And cabs are cheaper in New York. So a cab from the Strip to Astoria, like $15.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
That ain't bad.
Yeah.
That's not bad.
So I would have you live.
Take the train in. And if you're just like, I'm not going to wait for it on the way back.
I love Astoria. Are you going to be are you a baseball fan at all? I'm trying to. So you're gonna follow the Mets or the Yankees? That's
Yankees. I'm a Yankees fan.
I'm a Yankees fan too. So, but
I
still,
may go to my game, but
still Astoria. Still Astoria.
Astoria.
Now, but if you're going to be in Manhattan,
yeah, that's where I'm spending my time. Is Manhattan.
I would say either Upper West Side.
Really?
Yeah, Upper West.
Upper West, I could see. Yeah, nothing's on the East Side, right?
No, but
that's where the rich people live. And
I like the East Side,
people.
But it's not as there's like only one train.
I live on Sunset right now. I like going on.
Yeah, the East Side is kind of quiet. I like it though. But Upper West, even Harlem now, you can live in Harlem now, which is above the Upper West.
Kurt Metzger does. He lives up there, and it's like, dude,
yeah,
130th, 140th Street. And it's like, this isn't. He goes, you're just not everybody.
Yeah. Or you can go above that to either Washington Heights or Inwood.
Too far.
But I would say, Upper West, Chelsea's decent. Murray Hill is like, it's like not as, it's a little bit, not as hip, but it's okay. Yeah. Murray Hill is like.
See, I like hipsters.
In
I
the
don't
30s.
Like the way they dress and stuff all the time, but it's like, you guys are into cooler stuff. I mean, chances are if I ask somebody about The Wire, more hipsters will have
That's
seen
true.
It. And we could carry on a conversation.
Wait, also, there's Williamsburg. But I think Williamsburg, when people say Williamsburg, they're talking about a larger area because there's also Dumbo, which means down under the Manhattan Bridge.
That's used where to be, Madrigal lives.
Used to be called the Navy Yard.
Yeah.
And like I used to, my cousin lives there.
They've redone that, right?
They've redone it. It used to be just the Navy Yard. And
that's right over the bridge.
It's right over the bridge. It's underneath the Manhattan Bridge. And
Madrigal says the first stop out of Manhattan is his stop.
Is that right?
Yeah. So it's like it ain't that far.
No. It's definitely Brooklyn. Now you could... And I'm in New York, and I'm completely biased.
Okay.
Completely biased.
Sure.
And I'm wrong. You could live in Jersey. Now, I would never recommend that because you're in Jersey.
In my mind. Yeah.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Practically, it works.
You have to say that.
But you still have to make your mouth say you live in Jersey. And unless you're the Fugees, that's never been a cool thing. You know?
Aunt, yeah, or Springsteen. My aunt did this where she bought a house near Potomac, Maryland, which is like the rich part. But she lived in Cap'n John. She's like, I live in Potomac. I'm like... Really? It seems like it's still Cap'n John. She's like, it's a Potomac
Like,
she didn't want to say Cap'n John. Like,
that's funny.
You live in a nice house. Who cares?
Because you live in Hoboken, which is really right, same deal, one stop over the water. Yeah.
Are you?
I mean, Frank Sinatra's from there.
Oh, really? Yeah, well, that's a long time ago.
Yeah.
Whenever people point out those guys, I'm like, don't quote me somebody from the 40s as how things were cool.
I mean, that's the only thing you're going to have to rest your hat on, you know?
I'm starting to think Sinatra is, like, annoying.
Yeah, so don't like, do. I mean,
just sing some songs you didn't write.
So don't do Jersey. But
where are women hottest there?
No, that's not a problem.
20 to 35 year old women.
They're everywhere.
Do you think women in New York are hotter than LA?
I do.
How can you think that?
I do.
So many people from there think that.
Here's why. Here's why. If I can use a basketball analogy.
Sure. I'm done with that.
Here's what I figured this thing out already.
Okay.
A New York girl, New York in general. Mm-hmm. New York is this. New York is like that guy was playing basketball, and then you look at the stat sheet.
Yeah.
And you're like, he had 22 points? And you're like, it was a quiet 22, and you didn't even realize it was happening.
Yeah, he never scored four in a row.
Right. L.A. is that guy who had like two or three thunderous dunks. And you're like, he only had 12?
Oh, yeah.
And you're like, yeah, he just had those. It seems like he had more because he had like four dunks.
Yeah.
But he only had 12. And that's because L.A. may have like the hottest chick in L.A., might be hotter than the hottest chick in New York.
The average is not there.
But New York, it's just, there's eights as far as the eye can see.
There's not eights.
They are. If
eights are so hot. An eight is a hot person.
Okay, let's define. We have to actually say who's an eight now. This is going to get a little crazy, but
okay.
Let's see. So I know, so we can sort of, let's sync our numbers.
Okay. I'm trying to think who we should say. we shouldn't say comics because I'm going to get upset.
We could. Because, I mean, we're not disrespecting someone by saying they're an eight.
Yeah, but I'm just going to say who's like a 7.5.
No, let's say who's an eight.
Who's an eight, okay.
That way we can...
That chick that Iceman used to be engaged to.
Okay.
In her prime, when she started coming on the scene, we're like, oh my God.
Yeah, you mean... She was a Playboy person at some
really?
Point. Yeah, you mean... I know her name. I'm so sorry. I'm forgetting her name right now. It'll come to me. Was it Chris?
Chris Lizette.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, she was like an 8.5.
Okay.
At her prime.
Now
she's like a 7.
Wait, you're saying at her prime she's an 8.5.
Yeah.
And I'm telling you, she posed in Playboy.
Yeah.
And you, I think our number system is way off here. So
because you're used to New York uggos.
Right.
And you're like, I have to say these are people are okay.
No, because maybe I like a little more body. You know, I'm thinking of all the Dominican mommies walking around. all right, well...
Well, what would you say Chris is? A 10? At her prime?
At her prime, a 9 at her prime.
Not to me, 9s are like, that's pretty much as hot as you're ever going to see.
Because 10's a theoretical. I agree.
Yeah.
Like a 10 is like this ideal that we never really reach.
You know how when you're watching like YouPorn or RedTube or something,
yeah,
and
yeah.
they rate them, and
right.
you see like a 9.9 or 9.8, you're like, whoa, these are pretty good. If you saw a 10, you're like, that means it's perfect. And there's no
and nothing's perfect. I get that. I have a joke about that because I also think no one's ugly. Like, they're both ideals.
Right.
Like, you can only approach ugly, but...
Yeah, you can't get to a full what's that? Right. Kelvin, 0 Kelvin?
Right.
Can't get to that ugliness.
But, fuck. Okay, well, polite this then. If I'm going to meet you halfway and say that...
Bonnie McFarlane in her prime, before motherhood.
In her prime, was she an 8 in her prime, in your opinion? Or was she like a 7.5?
I'd probably be a 7, 7.5.
Actually,
cute though, like really,
really
cute.
Really cute. Or let's say this.
7's
then.
Good. 7's a reach.
Well, I'll say this. 7's as far as the eye can see.
Okay.
And like, but like this. This is maybe a more accurate way of saying it. In New York, you can fall ass backwards into a 7.
Yeah.
Like you don't have to do anything. You're just on a train. You walk to get a beverage.
And
you get
there.
A fruit, and they're there. You can mingle with them.
You definitely mingle more there, right?
Yeah, and then with some work,
yeah,
you can get an 8 or a 9. But if you don't want to do any work, you can get a 7 or 7.5.
Those are tough. I mean, I love a 6.
Okay, good. So, you know? Okay, you can get a 7 just living your life. Here in L.A., you can get an 8 or 9, but you have to kind of leave the house with that intention.
Yeah.
You know, in New York, you just leave the house with... Do your business, and that'll happen.
You'll come across one.
You'll come across one, yeah.
How do people out there in Brooklyn, New York, whatever, here's my thought. Like, when you go fuck somebody,
yeah.
Since you're out, you're not in your car, you're walking,
it's
you've
tough.
Probably been out all day long,
yeah.
You're sweaty.
Yep.
You got to get in a cab together.
Yep.
Do you make out in the cab?
In the summertime, it's humid.
Yeah, it's hot everywhere.
See,
even in the winter, when you're all bundled up, yeah. you're going to be sweaty.
Well, I don't drink, right?
Okay.
And the only reason I say that is that these issues will affect me.
What issues?
What you're saying.
Yeah.
Like, I can't...
Because you can't ignore it.
I can't
drunk.
Ignore it. But I think what a lot of people do is they kind of get a little drunk and it's sort of like everyone just kind of deals with it.
Yeah, it's like when you go down on a girl and it's like, oh, you've been walking around all day today,
I could
huh?
never... That's not something I could do.
Yeah.
That's not even
like the,
at all.
Walking up 5 flights of stairs to get to your apartment, you're like, we're going to be out of
like fuck shape now.
Oh, well, then you play it different. You don't have to sleep with them that night. You might just be a phone number guy. Like, right. Get the phone number and then, you know, okay. Invite them to a mellow thing, like a bar underneath where you live. Just everything mellow, close to home.
Yeah, you can go nearby, too. There's always, at least there, where there's, yeah. Like, since it's built up so high,
right.
There's 30 places within 5 blocks of where you live.
You can always walk right up the street. And I think that's how you're going to play it. But I think a lot of people will be out all day. Because that's the thing. We have our cars in L.A.
Yeah.
And me, I have like an extra set of... I always have a jacket in my car. I have workout clothes. Everything's in my car.
Yeah.
In New York, that's on your person.
You got a wallet and a pocket.
You're walking around with
backpack,
a book bag
whatever.
On. You left the house at 8. And
I'm
you may never get home.
Grabbing the book bag, too, and trying to steal it from me.
Well,
yeah, who was that guy in My Boys? The cool guy? Who was in our circle a little bit?
In My Boys. Oh, you mean Jamie?
Jamie Kaler.
Jamie Kaler, yeah.
We were all talking about New York once because he lived there for a little bit.
Oh, nice.
And he was like, the problem is you don't have your stuff with you.
No.
You don't have a car. I have everything in my car.
Right. Like
change of
headshot.
Yeah.
Yeah, just.
Suit and tie, gets into that front audition.
Right.
Or shirt and tie anyway.
No, New York is, it's a tougher life. It's like even going to the supermarket.
Yeah, how do you walk back? Like I take my car, I take 8 bags with me.
No, you
got 2 bags.
You have 2 options. You're pushing a shopping cart.
Those upright square ones. With
yeah,
the mesh.
And every bump in the road makes it almost tilt over. But that's what like moms do that.
Yeah.
But what people do is you get 3 or 4 bags
because you don't have room to even like house a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
This kitchen would be massive in New York.
3 or 4 bags. That's right. You just keep going back. You go to the supermarket every few days. It's a different life. It's like the way it's weird. It's high tech, but it's how people used to live.
How do you deal with cockroaches and rats and stuff? Because they're everywhere there.
Yeah, I think you're going to have them. New York is a game of cleanliness. You just have to be cleaner than your neighbor. So at any point in time, the roaches will go there.
Oh.
Yeah. And you have to like here, like the way I live here, I'd have to be 8 times cleaner. Like that trash.
You couldn't leave it there.
Have
to attract something.
You eat an orange. You have to wrap it up in plastic, throw it away.
Take oil and
you have to dry your sink clean of water. You can't
dry
even
your sink clean of water.
Yeah, you can't just have random water in the sink.
Why?
Roaches will drink the water.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Water.
It's next level. Yeah.
Whoa. I thought that is clean.
No, but like my mom dries her sink completely dry every night,
and then hangs a towel up to dry.
Yeah, and then like if you get a little something to drink
water.
After she sleep, you have to dry the sink. And if you don't, it's like, what are you doing? You didn't dry the sink. Yeah.
Wow.
And my mom doesn't even have a garbage can anymore. Her new system is a plastic bag on top of the shelf.
Straight out to the chute.
Straight to the chute. So it's like you can kind of like not have roaches because basically you have them. They're in the walls, but you give them nothing to eat so they don't come to your house. Yeah.
I remember reading some book, some like... one of those like horror writers. It wasn't Stephen King, but it was like the next guy after that. And they were talking about some guy who was like living in the like dungeons of an abandoned carnival, and so far down in the cement that no rats and roaches were there because there was no food for them.
Wow.
There before.
And is that why he lived there, or just that was just a perk?
It was a detail. It was like he leaves cookies out because they just didn't go there.
That's funny. I wrote a blog recently on my blog. I spent the night at my cousin's house.
You still write a blog?
Yeah, I write a blog, and my cousin has roaches. I mean, he's not super clean, but he also lives right next door to the incinerator. He's got a bad deal.
So, yeah, that's a way to get roaches, too.
He lives right next to the garbage chute. So, you know, even if they
you gotta look at that before you get in the place. You can't just...
Even if they ate and they just walked to his house. So, I grew up around roaches, but I haven't had roaches in so long that I was, like, trying to get to sleep. And I was, like, I put my laptop bag... Because I brought my laptop with me. I put it on a table, on a chair, I mean. And I was just sort of, like... Everything, nothing on the ground, everything high above. And then when I left in the morning, I just sort of shook everything out because I was like, I don't want to bring
a roach with me
back to LA. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah. You get that scared of it. Like, this has to stay here.
Well, they don't stop once they start.
The roaches.
Yeah, they.
It's so hard. You got to spray everywhere.
I think, I could be wrong about this. I think they can just sort of produce without. I think they can just, I don't know if the.
One is enough?
I think, yeah, whatever that technical.
If you have two, you have 1,000.
Yeah.
It's like an iceberg, they say. It's like there's a lot more you don't see. But I had my next door neighbor who went crazy a little bit here in L.A.
Uh-huh.
They started leaving garbage out everywhere.
Oh.
And I got a lot more roaches. They would come over.
Yeah,
he had the most, but I, you know, they were like wherever.
They're just going to go where the food is. And I'm sure this building may have some, but like.
Got to have some.
Well, we have a lot of cats, too.
And they'll
eat them. That's our problem. We have random cats here.
Oh.
Some lady feeds them. It's like cats out there. It's outrageous. And
so it just attracts them.
I caught her one day. She was out there with a can of food, and I sort of looked at her. She was like, well, you know, if I didn't feed them, we'd have rats. We'd have rats. And yeah. I was like,
yeah, maybe that'll help.
That might be true. I don't know. But
still, like, why are they like, stray cats?
Who told you that all these cats were your cats? You know what I mean?
My grandmother used to feed cats in Israel.
Is that right? Israel has a ton of cats.
Yeah.
Dude.
You know why? Do you know the history of it?
No.
They had rats there, and they had, like, you know those things they have in, like, New Orleans, those, like, big rats, whatever they're called?
Yeah.
So they had, like, vermins like that.
Right.
And the British in the 1920s brought these cats in to kill them.
Interesting.
But the cats had no natural enemies. There were no wolves there or anything.
Right.
So they were just breeding.
Oh,
and
wow.
They were pets, and then they would just grow up on the street. And
they weren't
tough.
Getting them neutered. And
They would just get tough.
That's crazy, dude.
And you see a cat, they're like, they're like, snarl at you. You're like, Jesus, cat?
Yeah, the cats in Israel are
people
hella
have
bold.
Pets there.
Wow.
Because they're so out there all the, you know.
Well, New York has a lot of rats. It's getting a little better.
Like, nobody has a pet rat in New York.
No, but there's rats everywhere.
Yeah.
And mice.
Subway, you're like, ugh!
Yeah.
It's the worst moment when you see one. You're like, get away.
And there's one crawled up on that guy. There's a YouTube video.
What guy?
Some homeless guy. And no one says anything to him. There's like 15 other people in the train car with him.
A rat crawled on him?
Crawled up. And someone filmed it and didn't tell him.
Was he sleeping?
He was sleeping.
Oh.
Yeah.
Ew.
Yeah, that's horrible.
Were they
dude.
Filming the rat and they just watched it and then crawled up on a guy? Oh. And the rats have no fear of people.
They have no fear of people. No fear at all.
Ugh.
I went to this island. This is crazy. I performed on an island. There's an island off the Channel Island here. It's a Navy base. It's called St. Nicholas Island.
Yeah.
It's crazy. It's this Navy base. They do whatever they do there. They don't even tell you.
Yeah.
And they have foxes. Same thing. These foxes have been there so long, they have no natural predators. So they're not afraid of anything. They walk toward cars. So they're like, be careful because the foxes don't know enough to be afraid. Yeah. And this island is crazy. Like, some natives used to live there, and they like, some, I think Spanish came and killed them all.
Oh, really?
And one lady, they took them away. If they didn't kill them, they took them. And one lady was left by mistake.
One lady?
One lady.
With all the foxes?
Just by herself. And she lived there for 18 years.
Alone?
Alone. Capturing food, maybe eating the foxes, who knows. And it came back. Somebody else came to the island, discovered this lady, was like, this is outrageous. You know, took her back to Santa Barbara. And she died like a week later.
Really?
Yeah.
She couldn't handle it.
Something with the germs.
It was like the French chick in Lost.
Oh.
When she was just living there, you know?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Oh, you're not one of the others? You're just a different chick who's been here living on her own?
Yeah.
Man. Are there, when the hipsters moved in to Williamsburg?
And I was probably here when that happened. But,
oh, okay.
Yeah.
I was going to say, is it easier to date or to fuck a white girl for a hipster? Do hipsters go for that more? To try to show that they're...
You know, it's interesting. I think that if you are a black dude and you're in a group TV on the radio, or if you're, if you're most deaf.
Yeah, or that one guy from Dave Matthews Band.
Yeah. If you're Talib Kweli, you can. But I think with hipsters, I think they there is a race thing, but I think they draw their lines according to, like, school
style.
Or style.
And, right.
And, you know, I'm not
go for Ian Edwards, but they're not going to go for fucking Artie Fuqua.
Right. But Artie can will himself into any girl's pants he wants.
Really?
Yeah, he can just his friendliness and his charisma will win out.
Really?
Yeah.
Doesn't matter.
Does not matter.
That's all I heard about that guy is he goes to fuck.
Dude, he seriously, like, it's almost like you can't even learn from him because he's that he's so good that you can't do what he does.
Yeah, you need someone like way, way lower. So, like, let me see the fundamentals.
Exactly, because it's next level with him, you know. But yeah, I think with hipsters, I still think,
oh, maybe that's what it is. So the only interracial stuff they're doing is they're like, they don't even see race, but they see fucking style.
Yeah, you got to have the black rimmed glasses on and a beard. You got to kind of.
Yeah, most deaf is like, yeah, you fit in.
You got to look the look. You got to be like that black dude who went to a prep school and, like, you know, maybe went to an Ivy League or whatever, graphic designer dude, you know, like.
Yeah.
And it's weird because I'm like that dude, but I'm
not. That guy.
I'm close, but I'm...
Yeah, you're right on the border of that guy.
Yeah, I'm
you
close.
You can't be wearing fucking shorts out during the day.
No, this is completely unacceptable.
Yeah. But nothing on your t-shirt, just a blank shirt.
But I think for a black guy, if you want to date a white girl, I think still the Midwest is what? Just...
difficult?
No, it's not.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I think it's just...
People like, it's time to try this?
It's like the South, but not as sort of... restrictive.
Mm-hmm.
I think when I'm there, I feel like white girls like me more. Even in New York, it's like not super easy, I don't think.
I know my friend Jesse in college. Uh-huh. Where'd you go to college?
I went to New York Institute of Technology in New York.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, this is a NIT. Technical school. NYIT. Yeah. NYIT.
But there was all these different bars.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Each one had a different. There's a hippie bar,
right?
And there's and anybody can go to any one, but every night there's a different special, so everybody would go to the corner on Tuesdays,
right.
Dollar pitchers. But Jesse would go to College Station and got shut down for letting underage girls in all the time.
Oh wow!
It was a white bar,
and this is where in
University of Maryland.
Oh, okay.
And it was a white bar, and he was like, "Here's what happens here: half or 60% of these girls are disgusted by me." Because he's Liberian. He's black.
Right.
Big guy, good looking,
Right.
But they're disgusted by me. He goes, but the other 40% are sort of intrigued.
Interesting.
And I don't give a fuck about the ones that don't like me.
Right.
You know what I mean? Dude. Who else has 40% of people being into them here?
Oh, yeah. And that's the thing. Like you got to, as a guy, like I've always been a guy that most of the girls are not checking for me.
Yeah.
But a percentage of them have to have me. And you just have to, know that. Who those girls are, identify them, and it's a piece of cake. And when I lived in Boston,
have to have you for what? For your color, or for whatever it is.
For whatever reason, like my could be pheromones. Who knows?
Because
like in Boston, there was a bar that I swear to you, it was the Hong Kong, not the one in Harvard Square where the comedy is done, but there was a Hong Kong in Faneuil Hall.
Yeah,
and I
Penny Hall is all I knew about Boston for a while. I'm like, this place is lame. You're like, no, go outside of that area.
Yeah. It was never, I don't know how does a club take on have a personality? Because I never saw it written anywhere. No one talked about it, but it was just.
By the playlist?
Something. It was where like a black guy would go and there were slightly, like kind of portly white women there.
Yeah. And word of mouth, it just became a thing.
That was a specialty. Like,
because if you're a super hot girl, you're like, I'm not going there. It's a bunch of ugly girls and black dudes.
Yeah, and black girls wouldn't go because they'd be like, I'm not. That's that scene. It was
a bar will serve anybody. If it's a gay bar, like beer is $5. We don't care, but it's only gay people go.
Right.
Yeah, you're right.
It was so specific, and it was like, but even me, I couldn't go there because it was just like I would go, but it was like, it was like a layup. It was almost like
too easy, huh?
Yeah, it was something about it that it was almost too fetishy.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I think.
Yeah, when I see girls, I mean, you've been hung out at clubs enough.
Yeah.
To every once in a while, there's a girl that just, I'm trying to say this nicely, but they just get passed around.
Right.
You know, that's not the right way to say it. Because I'm like, okay, you like fucking comics. That's cool.
Right.
You know what I mean? Do whatever you want. It's okay. But like, a bunch of people fuck them. They like fucking comics.
Yeah.
And to me, I'm like, meh.
It's tough. I met a girl.
Even if they're cute, it's like,
no, it's tough.
I'm with everybody. I don't care.
I met a girl once. I actually went through with it, but I was overseas. Wow, a long time ago. I was in Japan, I think it was. And this girl, I was dancing with her, and like, it was just ridiculous. Like, just one guy was looking, and she was like, oh, he's my ex. Don't worry about him. I was like, okay.
Why is he looking?
And then as we left, like, literally, guys were going like this to me, like pointing at me, giving me the thumbs up, like, yeah, you got the right one. Then on the street, guys were like, and I was like,
you're about to get laid. You're like, how do you guys all know this?
It was almost like every night this happens, and whoever wins that night is the winner. Mm-hmm. But they were all cool with it. It was just weird. I was kind of like looking around, like, what the hell is going on?
You at the numbers.
Yeah. It's literally, dudes were like.
That's hilarious. Did you bone her?
I did.
Of course.
Yeah.
Of course.
I sometimes in that situation I can't, but for some reason I was like.
As long as you don't know ahead of time.
I just pushed through. I was like, you know what? I don't know why those guys were giving me the thumbs up and pointing at me.
I can just not face it for a little bit.
Right.
So when you do, you can't unface it.
Exactly.
I had sex with a comic once a long time ago. She had herpes. I didn't get it, luckily.
Oh, you're very lucky.
It was like 12 years ago. We wore a condom.
Right.
But she told me like right before we were going to have sex, where I was all boned up.
Is that right?
Yeah. But
I'm surprised you didn't go. Right.
It was enough where it's like, I'm so fucking horny right now that it's like, can I get this?
12 years ago. So you wouldn't be as horny now if that
happened. No, not at all. It was like, I hadn't fucked that many people. It's like, I got the fuck.
Right.
But she was like, I haven't had an outbreak in 6 years, and you almost definitely can't catch it unless I've had an outbreak. And with a condom, it could put the odds go even further down. And I was like, all right. So I went for it. But then, like a week later, she was like, hey, you want to go out again? I was like, no, you have herpes.
Yeah.
I don't want to fucking.
Well, I mean.
It got to me later.
What would be the play there if you loved her, maybe, and you guys were just going to live with it?
Yeah. But
you didn't love her. And she didn't tell you. I think when you have that kind of a situation, you have two options. Get someone horned up.
Yeah.
And then throw it out there. And
let them make a decision then. Right. When they're not in the right state of mind.
Three options. That, don't tell them.
Don't tell them. Sure, that's an option.
And the third option is don't have sex with them. Make it like a long courtship. And then hopefully
slip it in, not before that.
You guys like each other enough.
And then say, you know, I need to tell you something over lunch.
Right.
When it's not about to happen. Right. It's like, you need to make a decision. But
those are the options. So I don't know. I mean,
my thought was like, it was the second time I'd hung out with her. And the first time I went down on her, but we didn't have sex.
That would have been like a good time to tell you.
Like, yeah, I went down on you with her. Like, I don't know what you catch and where, but like, man, you should have told me these things.
Plus, it's like her not telling you could cause her to have stress and cause an outbreak to happen. I'm not sure if that
to come off on stress.
I think stress, maybe. I don't know.
I see that,
but like
stress make him get more sick or susceptible to stuff.
I think so. I've never heard Dane talking about it on stage, and he was like three out of.
I guarantee
like,
Dane's fucked enough people where he has to worry about these things.
Well, he was talking about it on stage, and he's like, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4 herpes. 1, 2, 3, 4. He was just fucking around.
Oh, really?
Based on like the percentage or whatever.
Oh shit! I did the same exact thing. Did he really say that? Fuck! I gotta lose it.
Maybe not. But something like that.
Yeah.
And then he was like, then he said under his breath, you know, like that act out. He goes, "Stop talking about it, Dane. I'm gonna have an outbreak because you're causing me. Because I'm all stressed out." So from that point on, I always thought, "Oh, stress must have something to do with it."
I do that too, by the way. I get a lot of my news or information from comedians, even though I know they're making shit up, I'm like, no, it's a fact. Because
what else are you gonna do?
Yeah.
Some sort of research?
Yeah, I get almost all my news from that.
Right.
About Cassie Anthony and all these people just from comics talking about it.
Yeah,
figure out what the truth is, and then
I'm completely like that because I don't watch the news because I figure like it's like being an exec, NBC exec or top agent, where it's like, the talent that's good enough will somehow get across your desk.
Find you.
Yeah. They'll find you. And I feel that way about news where it's like, I'm not going to just sort of follow every little thing. The big stuff gets to me.
I'll hear about it.
Yeah, right. Exactly. You know? Exactly. And some people would be like, that's a silly way to live. But with a 24-hour news cycle, I can't just get worked up about everything.
Mitzi used to do this where I had to sit with her stuff, and she would just watch MSNBC like all day long.
Fox News.
And it would be the same stuff every 3 hours.
Yeah, it's like ESPN.
The same story, just shoving it down your throat. Yeah, it's like this highlight. It's not new. It's just a different angle.
And that's the thing. On slow news days, they just make up.
Beat
they
shit
make
the
something
ground.
News. Yeah.
How about just do an op-ed piece or something? Like talk about a puppy that got born with one leg and survived or something.
I think 24-hour news is really a bad thing. So and they're not even telling you still half the stuff.
Yeah.
There's still like genocide you don't know about.
Yeah. I talked to these guys from Anonymous Content. Anonymous, the you know, whatever, subversive group. And they were like, people just don't know the facts about things. And our job, we like free information.
So
we want you to know about everything and make your own decision.
I think the WikiLeaks guy was trying to do that.
Yeah. He was like, just here. You don't even know about this stuff.
Yeah.
Just know about it and then decide whatever you want. Yeah, but he goes, the media just decides how to slant something and it only reports half of it.
Completely. And that's the thing about comedy is that at its best, it's still this sort of like somewhat democratic thing, even though it's subjective and everyone laughs at something different. But like the best comics find some sort of common line, some through line to make most people laugh. And since you can't force someone to laugh, you still, even though, I mean, some people get opportunities and you can argue they don't deserve it. But at the end of the day, since laughter is still, I think, an impulse.
You can read it,
You know, even though if you like someone, you're more likely to laugh, but still it's an impulse. So it's some truth there that you can't take away.
Yeah, you're hitting somebody in their spot on them.
Like you can say like, okay, these 10 guys are funny, but we're gonna make these 2 guys break out.
Yeah.
But you can't take someone who's not funny
and make them break
out.
Yeah, this is what people didn't understand about affirmative action.
Yeah.
Like, they're not hiring underqualified black dudes.
Right.
Just saying 60 people are qualified for this.
Right.
5 of them are black. But they're all qualified.
Right.
But since we haven't hired a black guy in 17 years,
we need to make
up for stuff and get one of the qualified people who happens to be of color. People.
Right, exactly, exactly. And that's the thing that people – and if it ever went to the point where it was an unqualified person, then maybe it went too far.
Yep.
But I don't think in most cases it went that far.
Yeah.
I don't think it – and that's the thing with comics. Like, even if some of my friends would be like, oh, this person, that person. I have friends who are like, why aren't you on TV? Like, I have to answer that question, which is weird. And I'm like, listen, the guys on TV are funny. Like, no one is like –
horrible
sucking and getting a TV show. You know, they may
it's
not be
like, no, they were friends with better people that did stuff. I don't know.
Yeah, or whatever, something happened, they impressed the right person on the right night, or you know,
somebody wandered in while they were on. That's a lot of it.
Yeah and so I don't lose sleep over that, but I think a lot of people don't understand, you know. But if
someone, it's annoying when people ask you like, how come you're not on TV, and you have to defend yourself, but you're like, no, you don't understand, all I care about is just being funny. I let that stuff either take care of itself or not.
Exactly.
I'm just going to be funny.
Exactly. And you know, we all know guys who are like, were funny.
And never did anything.
Yeah, not funny, then funny again. Like, like a Tom Rose, I saw him recently. And just we're like, he was a guy who kind of hit early.
Yeah.
Had a TV show. Then he says, fuck it, I'm going to Holland. He went to the Netherlands, had a TV show there.
You forgot about him.
Came back. Funny again, still funny, and people were like, "Oh, this guy's
in style too, and out of style."
Yeah, like you're doing your thing, and people pay attention. They don't pay attention, and you're just always just doing your thing.
Yeah.
So
you get a part in a sitcom, you're like, "Awesome! I nailed this part. I got it over that guy and that guy and that guy. They all wanted this part,
right?"
But the sitcom did not get picked up.
I have a friend who's done like 5 or 6 pilots.
Joey from Friends.
Yeah.
Was a pilot that year he either didn't get or it didn't get picked up.
Wow.
And then he was able to do Friends, which completely made his career.
Yeah.
But if he had gotten that shitty pilot and they went for 3 episodes and got canceled, he would not be on Friends.
We wouldn't know
whatever
him.
He's on right now.
We wouldn't know who he was.
Yeah.
And so that's the game that people don't get. But as far as the news goes, it's sort of like, that's the thing. Like the news guy is like, this is the news.
Yeah.
You know? You can't be that way with comics. You can, but you got to pick funny guys.
Yeah.
Like, you can be like, this guy's going to break out, but he's got to deliver
when it's time.
Yeah. So I think that helps me sleep at night, because it's kind of like, well, everyone's deserving, and some people get it, some people don't. But it's not like, and it's way, this is, when my friend said that to me, I'm like, there are guys funnier than me who don't have a TV
who
show.
Who don't have it, yeah.
Who would be even ahead of me in
Do you
line.
Think when Drew Carey got a sitcom, he's like, no. That guy's funnier than me. He deserves it for me. It's like, no, you're lucky to get it when you get it.
You get it when you get it. And I go to the Comedy Magic Club a lot, and that place is just sort of like,
it's a winner land.
Like legends.
People that are winners hang out there.
Yeah. And like, you see like a Ralph Harris, and you're like,
yeah.
Like, what he can
he's
do in 5 minutes.
Beautiful career, and you're a hilarious comic.
Yeah. And so, I think that's the thing. Like, it's weird because I have friends who either think I'm rich or they think they have to pick up the tab. It's nothing in between.
Yeah.
So I either get like, well, let the big time comedian pay for it, or I get no. We'll,
okay, you chase your dream.
We'll get it. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm always like, all right, whatever.
Yeah. You know, so.
All right. I gotta go to basketball.
Oh yeah, I gotta go with you.
Yeah.
We gotta play ball.
40 minutes. So thanks, man.
Thank you, and I hope it was, you know, solid. And
yeah, it was great.
I know it's not as
good one.
Irreverent as normal, but I think we had a good time.
Yeah, it's either I choose like really dark, serious subjects, or just like, let's just talk to funny people about something.
Yeah. I appreciate it.
Whatever.
And I hope I gave people insight on Brooklyn. I'm not sure. I want to say one thing.
Yeah, sure.
I'm from a place where two or three NBA basketball players are from my neighborhood.
Who?
In the last 15 years. My block almost. Stephon Marbury. Sebastian Telfair.
Yeah.
And
he was heralded. Both
Lance,
those guys.
Lance Stevenson.
Okay.
Those three guys are all from my small little neighborhood.
Really?
And then a string of
those first two guys were like, they're going to change the NBA.
Yeah. But they didn't. Well Steph did. Stephon had
a
good career.
Yeah.
I don't know what happened to Sebastian. I think
he might get injured or something. Or
I think he may have came out too. He should have went to college 1 year, I think. He went straight from high school. But when you see him in high school, you're like, fuck.
Yeah.
Anyway, I only say that to say Now, we're going to go and play basketball, and you may not see any evidence of that when I play.
When play. It's all right. It's a comedian's basketball league. We're all fine.
Right, right.
Yeah. People are terrible, and it's okay. Wayne Fetterman might be playing with us tonight, by the way.
I played with Wayne before.
200-year-old Wayne Fetterman might be playing with
the
us.
The thing is, Wayne had on, like, he had on, like, Converse
or
something.
Yeah, he wears high socks and comedy. Yeah, I was like, he's an ABA player.
Yeah,
and that's Converse? A style he plays.
And not basketball ones, like the Chuck Taylors is what I'm saying.
Low tops?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I used to play with those in high school.
Fuck. Outrageous. Well, thank you, though.
No problem. My CD comes out. Probably it's already out by the time this airs.
Oh, nice.
Revenge for the Holocaust. Pick it up at iTunes. All right. Whatever.
That's a great title. And I don't know what I have going on, but just people
Say something. You got a Twitter,
FunnyDP. They can follow me.
FunnyDP.
And my blog is DwaynePerkins.com/blog.
How often do you write the blog?
You know, it's probably average to a week.
DwaynePerkins.com/blog.
Yeah. Two a week.
That's great, man.
Yeah, average.
People fell off on blogs after, like, MySpace.
I know.
Facebook didn't
MySpace
show a place for it.
MySpace was great for blogs.
It had a place for it.
Yes. And the MySpace notes, the Facebook notes, not as good.
Oh, no.
But I'm like 300 and something blogs in.
Wow.
So I just keep going, and you know, I don't know when this is going to come out. I'm working on compiling the best ones as an ebook.
Sure. So, that's a good idea. I was going to ask that.
Yeah, that's my project. Hopefully before Christmas. Yeah.
Really? Wow, that's a great idea.
Yeah.
It's like, you don't these days, you don't need a publisher. It's like, if I can have my fans want this, here. Just,
not at all.
Here it is.
Yeah, I'm not going to try to kill them on a price, but it'd be...
You can just find a dispersal method.
Yeah, yeah.
You don't need Penguin Publishing to come help you.
Not at all. So
that's cool.
That's the goal. We'll see.
Trying to get that done by Christmas?
I hope so, yes.
Okay,
I have a title. But I don't know. I might change the title. But my working title is Hot Chocolate for the Mind.
Nice.
Because it's like a heady thing, and it's... I don't know. I think the soul is... kind of like gets too much attention. I want to work on your mind. That's where my blog tries to hit. So and hot chocolate. I'm hot chocolate.
That's what I was going to say. It's like, and you're hot chocolate.
Works on many levels. Sure, yeah.
Not even intended. I love when I think of something racial and I'm like,
I never thought about it until last week. I was
really?
Wait, I'm hot chocolate. Cause
I
went on stage with hot chocolate like that. Like, how ridiculous. I went
Did
on
really?
Stage because I was cold. And I go, I'm sorry. I had to bring a hot chocolate. And I'm not talking about me. Something ridiculous like that. And
I'm like, that's my.
I was like, wait, I guess. So there you go.
All right, Brad. Yeah, let me know when it comes out. I'll Twitter it and stuff.
Absolutely, I will. Absolutely.
All right, thanks, Dwayne.
Thanks, man. Thanks, Ari. Wake up and smell a real flavor. 911 is a fake lifesaver. To get up and get down. 911 is joking, yo, damn. Get up and get down. Late 911, where the main crown? Get up and get down. 911 is joking, yo, damn. Get up and get down. Late 911, where the main crown?
Boom! There it is, everybody. Ari Shaffir, Skeptic Tank, number 82. Where Brooklyn at? In the books. Thank you very much to Dwayne Perkins for talking to me about it and convincing me that fuck yeah, I want to be there. And also, fuck yeah, I'm scared of that place. Ew, cockroaches. I don't want to deal with massive cockroaches. Although, let's be honest, Ari. Today, you picked up the fucking shorts because you're going to Runyon Canyon with Brody. And you saw a cockroach on your shorts. So what'd you do? You put the shorts back. Let the cockroach go. You know you have them. They must be all over. Ugh, I gotta bomb this place. I just gotta bomb it full of that shit. But here's my problem. I know if I do this, the fog thing where it just covers your place, you know, where you have to leave for up to 8 hours or 4 hours or whatever. They had said you have to cover your food and empty up all the pantries and stuff, all the shelves. I ain't gonna do that. I'm not emptying anything. I know myself. I'm just going to close the pantry doors and then end up eating that food anyway, and it's not going to kill the cockroaches. Me and my roommate, my first roommate, Aaron Levine, were in L.A. They covered my apartment with that, you know, that tent. They covered it with a tent and sprayed for insects and stuff. And, you know, we covered everything up like we were supposed to. And, you know, threw a lot of food out. But then there was a lot of food that wasn't covered up, but it was, like, sealed-ish. It was either in the fridge or in the cupboards, but, like closed jars, you know, open already, but then, you know, reclosed. Like half of a thing of pasta sauce. And, dude, I didn't eat it for, like, 2 days, but then I remembered, oh, yeah,
I'm super fucking poor. I've been living off $8,000 for the last year and a half. So I'm just going to go ahead and eat that pasta sauce. And I was about to say, like, and I'm fine, but now I realize, no, I'll just get cancer when I'm 51. Anyway, so I forgot what I was saying about this episode of this podcast, but there it is. So thank you very much to our sponsors. Go to my website, arithegreat.com. That's got all my dates. And you can click on the links for Amazon there and for Gamefly. Hit either one of those. Before you do your Amazon shopping, just go to my website, hit that, and they give me cash back. And then the Gamefly thing I already explained. Just hit it. Do the free trial for me. Really, I'd really appreciate it. And above and beyond everything else, the least amount of money I get is from my CD. But it's the most important thing. Revenge for the Holocaust. My debut CD, my debut album. The hard copy version will be out like at the end of October or early November. And I'm sure I'll sell those on my websites and get them in stores and stuff. But until then, just get the fucking, unless you want to wait. If you want to wait, I get it. That's cool. But if you just want a good CD, just get it. Go pick up my CD. If you like this podcast, help me out by doing it. And also, no, not help me out. Help yourself out. It's fucking good. It's an hour of really great comedy. Why am I trying to convince you like that? Like I'm yelling. Like if you don't listen to comedy series, don't worry about it. But just go out and get it. I really want everyone to have it. So get it on iTunes. Like I said, that'll help legitimize me. Or steal it if that's the way you get music and stuff. Fucking by all means. Pateo Vone. Go for it. I just want you to hear it. Share it with your friends. If you're in a car ride with your friends, fucking put it on. Put on a favorite track. And by the way, the feedback I've gotten has been tremendous. I've really loved what everybody said about it. I'm just so happy to finally get something out there. It's the beginning of my body of work. So I'm just really happy it's out. And share it with your friends and share it on Facebook and Twitter and tell me on Facebook or Twitter or at my website. You can email me there, contact at arithegreat.com. And I read all that shit and all the feedback of what bits you guys like and what lines you guys like. I fucking get off on that. I really like it. I would love to tell you. I don't look at any of that shit. All the comments and the ratings and stuff on this podcast, I don't check. I checked for like a week when I started on my own and then I stopped. It was just unhealthy. But for the CD, I'm just doing it nonstop. Every review you guys leave on iTunes, I am reading. Probably more than once. I'm looking at all of them. I'm super interested in what people say about this one. I know I shouldn't be. I should just do stand-up for myself. But I already put it out, so now I just want to see the response. And I really like the response. It's been great. Thank you guys for leaving your comments on the iTunes page. All right, you guys. So that's it. So until next week, hasta la vista. Go visit my website and get all the shit there. And that's it. And check for me in a city near you. Bye. Oh, and that Chicago show is one of the big ones. Here are the big, big shows. Chicago, D.C., and New York. Those are the big, big shows. All right. The rest are all just really good shows. All right. I'll talk to you later. I'm meandering now. We should play as Beasties. Beasties. Beasties.